Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Trump wins Pennsylvania. I've just declared for it. I'm the first. You know, we're usually out in the forefront here of news anyway, but I'm just declaring right now. Well, on behalf of Action Radio, which is you know, the 12 to 15 of us, I don't know how many there are with folks that are associated with the show. I'll say the 20 of us. You know, I'm taking this opportunity as the CEO, creator, and host of Action Radio to declare on behalf of Action Radio, we are declaring for Trump. Trump wins Pennsylvania. Okay, now is anybody else saying that? No. They're still waiting for the Supreme Court case. But considering the flawless logic of the lower court and the fact that there's going to be an election, and I just learned literally seconds before the show started that Pennsylvania judges for the Supreme Court are elected, and they have to run in partisan primaries. This is going to be one hell of an election season. This is going to be really fun. And so the idea that you know, this court case, that actually Jonathan broke the news yesterday. I should have declared yesterday. I changed the show title yesterday a couple of times. But we're coming at right now. Trump wins Pennsylvania. That means 20 electoral votes are going to be going in the Trump camp. Unless, of course, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, being partisan Democrat, completely goes against the Constitution, goes against the will of the people, votes for vote fraud. And being partisan Democrats who have conscience, that's a very good possibility. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they, given the fact they're going to have to run, given the fact that the tide is going to be against them, given the fact there's a governor election and all kinds of other things coming up, I really, really am curious to see what happens. And it looks like we've got my friend Alan Dawson checking in from Belize, which is such a wonderful little place, part of the British Commonwealth, to which I was a part by birth, being Canadian. And so we'll see what's going on. So you got any... Alan, you got any truckers storming to the capital of Belize to get rid of your mandates? Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Greg. How are you all doing today?
I actually am doing very well. It's been a great week. It's been a fascinating week. My friend Michael Volpe still wants to get on the show with a special on family law. And it's like, I am just so busy with all the things happening. This is an incredible time we're living in. We're actually in, I think, one of the most exciting periods of American history. But because we're in it, people really don't see it. I mean, they'll be talking about what's going on now for decades, maybe, a couple hundred years. They'll say, you know, remember what happened back in the 2020s, the Trump factor. You know, there were presidents and there were good presidents and bad presidents. And then there was Trump. And then all hell broke loose. But these are fascinating times. And so I'm trying to document as much of it as I can. And so, Michael, I will get back to you someday. We'll get back to one of his specials. But anyway, so Belize, you guys got a trucker convoy yet? You're but the only person that doesn't if you don't. We got to get a truck convoy. Go Belize. Go Belize. Free Belize. Free Belize. Free from your mask mandates. Free from your vaccinations. We want Belize freedom. Free to be Belize. Yeah. I Belize. I believe in Belize. I'm giving you all these bumper stickers, Alan. I'm on a roll today. So, you know, just
we just started the show. Like, unbelievable.
Unbelievable. That's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
You better see it to Belize it. Seeing is believing.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Unbelievable time in Belize.
He thinks he's funny.
Watch out now.
Do you have bumper stickers on all those? We should get bumper stickers. So if anybody wants bumper stickers on Belize, where do you have like a little extra business going here? You probably, you know, sell a few. You know what I need to do? I need do you make them or do other folks make them? Do you make any bumper stickers now that we're on the subject?
I'm sure, yeah. Yeah, there's a store in the city where you can pick up all different types of bumper stickers that says stuff about Belize.
Okay, I have a marketing person that works with me. And so what I want to do is I'm going to get you guys connected, and we'll see if we can get some Belize products on our soon-to-be-growing Action Radio products Facebook page. We've got some pretty controversial T-shirts that are very much pro-freedom, anti-experimental vaccine. And so you might want to take a look at those. But, yeah, I think we should I'm going to make a note to myself. Connect with Belize bumper stickers. So that sounds good. So what's going on down there, sir? Are you still calm, cool, collected, and, you know, got a lot of snowbirds? What's tourism? What's happening?
You know what? Tourism is just on a great. It's got a good. I'd say we're on a roll, man. It's increasing here. Lots of tourists coming, lots of flights coming, lots of flights bringing people, lots of cruise ship coming in. The new thing what they're doing now is they're bringing a little tiny ship. It takes about 400, 600 people, I think. And it rides along with the bigger ships just if in case there is anyone sick on them. Then they'll be transferred from the big ships to the little medical ship. I think that's
what they have their own quarantine ships, their own little hospital ships.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Yeah, it rides along to the different ports.
I haven't heard it. Does Shelby know this? She must. I don't know. We need to tell her.
I don't think so.
So tell me, are these government ships, Navy ships, hospital ships? What kind of ships are these? This is the first ever. You're breaking news, dude. Wait a minute. Let's give him a round of applause.
Oh, Ellen Dawson.
Breaking. Wait a minute. Let me find it here. I'll get you the gong first. Cause and now, breaking news from Ellen Dawson in Belize. Let me get you my news. Here we go. And breaking news. Here we go. From the wire. And now from Belize City, Belize, Ellen Dawson reports on the latest ships, the quarantine ships following cruise ships. Well, let's go. Let me get you my... I'm having fun with my buttons this morning. Can you tell? Where's my... here we go. And here's your round of applause. So this is fascinating. This is why I love this show, because I never know what's going to happen. I don't... I never pre-program the reports of people. They tell me, you know, what they want to tell me, and this is what makes it fun. So tell me about these ships that are following the cruise ships.
Yeah, so what they apparently do is they hang around for the duration of the main cruise lines that's in port for the day. That's like the Celebrity. We have the Royal Caribbean. We have Princess. And, of course, the famous Carnival. And
right.
They will hang around if in case they detect any persons of interest with the virus on board. Well, they'll just take them off the main cruise lines and put them onto these small medical ships, and then they'll be getting and receiving their medical attention, what have you, that they'll need, and they'll be taken back to the U.S. after the duration of the Western Caribbean cruise.
See, this is fascinating. This raises a bunch of questions, because I'm immediately thinking, because this hasn't made the news here, and you'd think it would, right? But here's the first problem they have. This is a propaganda problem, because people on cruise ships are fully vaccinated. The crew is fully vaccinated. We've got a sterile, enclosed environment without outside influences. You know, COVID doesn't float in on the ocean, you know, air currents. Okay. You know, first of all, sun kills it, salt water kills it. In fact, everything over the ocean kills it, right? So COVID isn't floating in, and by the time it gets out, you know, from land out to sea, it's killed that way too. So there's no COVID coming in from the outside world. So the only COVID that could be brought in is being brought in by the people. And if the people are all fully vaccinated, that means fully vaccinated
they
people are carrying
COVID.
So fully, and you've been fully vaccinated, and you had COVID. So there's proof right there.
And Greg, I've seen a clip. I don't know if you've seen that one from a guy in Europe. He's gotten his fourth shot, and it was still not effective against the Omicron.
Well, it's not. What it's effective at doing is destroying your immune system, for what I'm hearing. It lowers your white blood cell count. So you need to do everything you can to boost your white blood cells. So you need to, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, but I would work on your immune system. And you have your own, you know, home remedies, Belizean remedies for all kinds of stuff to boost your immune. I think you mentioned some of them before, echinacea and some of the other things. But I would, in fact, we have one of our folks here, Chancey Terry. Chancey Terry Chancey Terry is a healing wellness person and can, you know, give you all kinds of good advice. In fact, you can give her advice too. You guys can trade, you know, information, but there are ways to boost your immune system. And that's what boost your white blood count.
Naturally.
Exactly. Cause you need to combat this. You need to combat what I call the vaccine injury, you know, cause that's a dangerous thing. But here's the thing too. If the fact that these ships are there proves that the CDC is lying. Of course, we know the CDC is lying, but this proves it even further, because you've got hospital ships following a fully vaccinated cruise ship. That shouldn't be, right? If they work.
I know.
So where are the ships coming from? Do you know? Let me do a quick duck, duck, go search right now, because this is the first I've heard of this. This is fascinating. Unless I'm looking, I'm not looking in the right places. So let's put hospital. I'm typing right now.
No, I'm okay.
All right, go ahead, clear it up. Would you like to restate?
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly where that little medical ship is coming from, but I am assuming it's coming out of either Florida or Texas. So ultimately from the U.S., right? I'm thinking.
There's nothing
but,
on it.
I can get clarity on that for this week coming. I'll get some information to see what that ship is, you know. As much details as I can get, I will get from some of the guys out there at the port.
You know, yeah, that's good. I'm just doing a quick DuckDuckGo search. There's nothing on this. There's nothing. No one says no. So are these ships coming? So are they coming out of Florida with the cruise ships? Are they following inside of them? Are they docking? You know what this strikes me as? Here's what this strikes me as. The CDC has struck a deal with Belize and the other ports of call of the cruise ships. And they've said, okay, we don't want you to be burdened with COVID. And I bet you the country said, well, we don't want to, we don't want COVID in our port. You know, I mean, we've got it anyway. We don't want any more of it from the cruise ships, right? So here's what they've done. This is my Greg scenario. Okay. So the United States government said, okay, we'll protect you from COVID by sending hospital ships to care for COVID patients that we all know shouldn't be there because everybody's vaccinated, right? So they've got these ships. So that takes the burden off Belize. So Belize doesn't have to – so your healthcare dollars don't have to be spent on cruise ship, you know, passengers that have COVID because these hospital ships are there. That's why they're there. That's the portable hospital. So we're actually sending a hospital with our cruise ship now, even though everybody's fully vaccinated.
Oh.
This is hysterical. Alan, this is great. This is amazing news.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
And listen, well, what do you think?
What the Belize?
Tell me what you think. I'm
what
curious.
What the Belize? You know what?
Go ahead.
I just sit back and listen to all the thing about this COVID situation.
Right.
I really rather just keep my comments to myself. Don't throw my opinions out there.
Dude, but, you're on a talk show. You have to give your opinion. It's part of the deal here.
And just listen to it and watch it all play out. And you know, but here's the next thing that the country has instituted.
Okay.
You coming into Belize, you got to buy an insurance, an $18 insurance.
For what?
And that's also to take care of any situation that may arrive in your trip that has to do with sickness and COVID and whatnot, hospitalization. Yeah, so you want to Google something on that and check that out. That's interesting. $18 per person.
And is that automatically sort of fudged into the other fees? Do people know they're pay? Do you have to pay it separately, or is it kind of wangled into?
No, you
got to
pay that. You got to pay that separately. Yeah. And it's on the website, the official website. When you're traveling to Belize and you search on new COVID-19 restrictions and protocols and what have you, travel instructions, it'll be right there now.
Okay. I'm just writing. Don't mind me.
And I'm thinking,
thinking,
I know a lot of, for the most part, Americans would travel with an insurance, right? If in case they would have an issue with a flight delay or what have you, flight cancellation.
Well, that's travel
you
insurance.
You have medical
that's
insurance.
Different. Yeah.
You have medical insurance too, right? If you have any issues
yeah.
in whatever country. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these places where you visit, sometimes those hospital medical institutions, they don't respect your medical insurances, right? They don't honor it. Am I right?
Oh, I don't know. I've never had to use healthcare in another country yet. I'm sure I will, but I haven't. That hasn't been an issue for me, fortunately. And I've done a lot of traveling. I would have, but I just never, you know, had a call. Most countries have government medicine, so they treat, you know, foreign visitors, tourists, and things like that. I think the United States does too. If you're a guest, if you're a tourist, as long as you're legally, well, even if you're illegally in the country, we still get treated, unfortunately, rather than get an ambulance flight back to your country. But I think as far as I know that happens. And I think that if you're in Belize, I think you have government healthcare, socialized medicine, so that takes care of tourists as well. But has that been a burden? Has there been a major increase in health expense, because first of all, you can't come into the country unless the vaccinated people are causing your health budget, your government health care budget, to get kind of excessive. Is that possible?
I know that I remember a situation where I had to take some tourists, visitors to the private medical facility, and
right.
they were trying to use their insurance here, and it didn't work. So they had to actually pay right out. They had to pay cash out of their pocket for the medical attention that they needed.
Right.
So I know not all of the medical facilities will honor your insurance policies. It doesn't work here.
I want to say reimbursement, though.
Cash.
Are you reimbursed when
so.
You...
I should think so, yeah.
Well, actually, if that's actually, that's another really good point for people is to pre-purchase health insurance from your insurance company. I remember I had to do that. Now that I think about it, when I went to, because I was young and healthy, I was 22 when I went to Europe, but I didn't know what the healthcare was going to be there. So I remember purchasing a 3-month temporary health insurance policy. I think it was Prudential, if I remember. But this is back in 1982, and so I actually had I had health insurance. I had an international health insurance policy, even though I was young and healthy, because, you know, stuff happens, right? Stuff can fall on you, you know, who knows? Because especially, you know, I crossed the Berlin Wall, who knows? I might have gotten, you know, gunshot wound. You know, anything could have happened, right? Because I was visiting, you know, man, I could have been, you know, crime victim. I mean, I went everywhere. I didn't want to tell the story so that that happened on that trip. But the point was I did have international health insurance. I had purchased it because I was working at the time. Obviously, I was touring Europe for 3 months. And so I had this temporary policy, which would have covered me in any country. So that's actually a smart idea for people traveling anyway. That you're covered. You buy a U.S. health insurance policy, an international travel policy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that,
right.
You know, and
so
I think that... but the rest of my life I've been working and had either workers' health benefit, health insurance, or I had my own health insurance or something like that. You know, so that really hasn't been an issue. But if you don't have any health insurance and you're traveling, it's a good idea to buy a temporary one, especially for young folks. And that's what I was. I was young at the time. You can do that. So Belize, now $18, that's not a big burden. If you can afford to go to Belize, you can afford $18. So it's not a really big burden on you.
Oh, yeah.
But how many tourists do you get? Go ahead.
It's an additional protection, right?
Well, it's actually a protection for Belize. It's a protection for Belize. It's not a protection for the tourists. Because if they still get sick and they still go to the hospital, what this does is protects you, the citizen of Belize, from the added expense of tourists bringing in COVID because they were vaccinated.
Right.
Notice that last little put. But actually, and that makes sense. I think Belize is acting in Belize's interest. That makes sense to me.
That's right.
Okay.
Now here's the next one. Now here's the latest one. Now our borders were set to open on February 1st, right? The land borders, that's Guatemala and Mexican border. They were scheduled to open on the 1st of February, but they had some delay because they're trying to, I guess, ramp up the protocols with the COVID-19 restrictions and what have you after it's open. So now they come up with a. Once you spend an overnight in Mexico or Guatemala, when you're returning to Belize, you got to get a $100 COVID-19 test to return into the country. That's a $50 U.S., right? That's the border to get back into the country.
for Belize citizens or for anybody coming into the country?
For Belizeans that cross the border, and when they're returning, you got to get that.
That's crazy. $18 for tourists for a health insurance plan, $100 for Belizeans. That's extortion, dude.
Yeah.
You need to fight that one. That one's wrong.
Oh, yeah. That's roadside robbery, right?
Absolutely.
I think what they're trying to do still is kind of discourage you from crossing the border.
Right.
I think, but at the same time, they want to open the border, so the economic situation continued to roll again between the two countries. Because Belize, I don't know if you know it, but Belize, it's often known that Belizeans were the ones that helped to grow the Chetumal City, which is a city right across the Mexican border in the state of Quintana Roo. We helped to grow that city because we pour across there for cheaper groceries, cheaper food items, and cheaper gas. So on a regular weekend, that border would often be packed, lines going across, because the people, they get more value for money, you know, buying groceries, even if they pay a little bit of duty coming back.
Right.
It still works out cheaper, yeah, buying your grocery there, because the Belizeans like to go and buy bulk. You know, like when you go to a Costco store, you can buy like a big this and a big that.
Oh, yeah.
This case. Yeah, sort of like that. So what they do, they just go stock up for the month or a few months, and they say it's worth it. And, of course, while you're there, you're paying $8 a gallon, $9 a gallon, as opposed to $12 a gallon right now. Guess the fuel price just went up again the last 2 days. So we're up to about $6.30 U.S. now for a gallon of gas in Belize.
That's ridiculous. I'm paying three.
Yeah.
It's about $3.25 on average around the Milton, Pensacola area. California's worse. They're probably like $6 or $7 there, just because they're so stupid. They have a special California gas formula, which can only be made in three refineries, and one's usually down for maintenance.
Yeah.
And if they lose another one to like a minor accident or something, that one closes down. So a lot of times California's on one refinery for the whole state, making their stupid, you know, formula just for them, because that's how they restrict driving. Well, the purpose of this,
I don't know, if they're up to $6 yet. They're probably up at $5 or something. I don't know that California is up to $6 yet.
Okay, well,
but
they've been as high as $7,
half,
but
more than,
yeah, but I don't know what they are now. Yeah,
You know that half the price of the fuel is tax. It's government tax, right?
Right. That's where your healthcare
here,
comes from.
Yeah.
That's your mm-hmm. socialized medicine, right? Is that where most of it goes? Okay. Well, that's a choice.
Yeah, so
I mean, that's a choice for nations. You know, if you want to have the government, you know, if you want to pay your health care, there's two ways to pay for your health care. You can pay through it through taxes, or you can pay through it for, you know, privately, or actually there's three or four. You can pay for it with private insurance or government insurance, you know, but either way, you're going to pay for it. Okay. So then the question is how.
Oh, yeah.
And what's the best way to pay? Wow. The best way to pay for it, I think, is to give to people what corporations have now, which is corporations have tax deductions. It's deductible, but it should be a tax credit. In other words, if you spend, you know, $500 a month or $1,000 a month for yourself or your family for healthcare, then that $1,000 mm-hmm. should be immediately given a tax credit. So in other words, your tax burden would be $1,000 per, you know, less. So it'd be $12,000 less, you know, or be taken off your taxes as a credit. So in other words, you're not losing any more money. The money would have gone to taxes, or it would have gone to healthcare. That's what a credit does.
Right.
It's a credit against your taxes. So in that respect, healthcare, it's not free. It's just taking money that would have gone to the government in taxes and going to healthcare instead.
Right.
So now the incentive is to make healthcare as competitive and as efficient as possible. See, now it's not. This is why this is a better system. Okay. So if you have tax credits, then it's in the government's interest. If the government wants more money in other taxes, like, you know, more productive economic development and economic activity, then they would find ways to make healthcare, you know, more efficient and offer, you know, more tax credits and get more competition into the system and, you know, make sure that prices are known and have people have medical savings account and have charge of their healthcare and get the same deductions the corporations get. That's the way to do it. So then you put on a competitive basis, and not only competitive, but open knowledge of exactly where are the expenses and what's going on. That's how you do it, because you're going to pay for healthcare one way or another. You're going to pay through it for, you know, but idea of paying gas taxes to give a government all kinds of money that they're mostly unaccountable for to give you some kind of a healthcare plan. You have no idea if the money you're paying for your healthcare tax is going directly to healthcare, good healthcare, any kind of health. You have no idea what's going on with it. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the reality. Yeah, I just pulled up the latest average price per gallon in California. Yesterday, the average was $4.64.
Oh, that's good.
$4.64 a gallon. Yeah, look at that. And that they're paying the most in the U.S., right? Them and, I think, New York.
Well, that's,
I think,
that's a special formula. But they have tax, too. See, they put tax. They have sales tax, excise tax. They have probably an electric car tax. They probably have a liberal tax and other taxes. You know, I mean, there's extra taxes on their gasoline. So now here's the thing, too. What's interesting.
Yeah.
When the price of gas goes up, the amount of tax goes up with it. So
Everything goes up.
Right, but in a state like California, which wants as much money from you as possible, there's no incentive for the government to create a situation where the gas price is lower. I mean, consumers love it because we spend less money on gas, but the government, you know, actually gets hurt, you know, when the gas price is too low, because now they're losing all their tax revenue that they think they're entitled to, which they're not.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, California especially, there's no incentive for the government to lower the price of gasoline and build more refineries and change and allow, you know, the same gas that the rest of the country uses. There's no incentive for that because they'd lose money. Government is a business.
Right.
Your government's in the health insurance business. California is in the Marxism business. You know, governments are in business. The federal government's in the vaccine business. Oh, there's the neighbor's dog.
Yeah, there we go. Neighbor's leaving. Yeah. Dog's barking.
Yeah.
Greg, hold on. Let me relocate from the front here.
Oh, this is funny. Live radio, people. This is what happens on live radio.
Yeah.
Well, let me see.
So our latest COVID-19 cases are up to, I think we have over 8,000 active cases right now, and a total of 629 deaths. That's where we are right now.
Is that total for the last 2 years, or is that this year?
Yeah. Yeah. The 8,000 is since the Omicron. It has gone up to 8,000. You remember right before Omicron started?
Right.
I told you we went down to like 400 cases, and then after Omicron, well, we got up to over 8,000 right now.
But how many of those cases are in the hospital? Omicron mild. Omicron is like, I call it the Omicold. It's an Omicold.
Yeah, that's it. Omicold. That's what I had.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Omicold. So how many of those cases are in the hospital of those 8,000 cases? You know, how many is in the hospital? 3, 4, 6?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just a few. Just a small percent, a little fraction, I would say.
So cases, the reason they use cases is because it allows the government to put in a big number. But the
so many people going in and getting tested. I mean, like yesterday was 400 plus that got tested. Mm-hmm. See what I mean?
Yep.
So that's
yep.
why they can get these numbers for cases.
And the funny part is that the tests don't work. The federal government just recalled 200,000 of their home tests because they don't work.
Yeah.
Let's get Shirley. I guess Shirley Wattrell on the line, who's going to do the report after yours. But I always like overlaps because it's fun. It's fun to get people who would never normally talk to actually be able to do so. So Shirley, I just learned from Alan that there are hospital ships following the cruise ships, and nobody's talking about this. So they've got their little COVID hospital, you know, in tow, so that nobody really knows, you know, that there's a COVID problem on the cruise ships because they can hide it in these hospital ships. What do you think of that?
So I'm not sure I understand. So what happens if someone gets tested and they have COVID, then they lift them or they get them onto this other ship?
Uh-huh.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yep, and apparently it's in port too. I think that's hysterical. This is, you know, this is the COVID cover-up. Great police COVID cover-up.
It's not the first time they've not told the truth or not told everything that's going on. Let's put it that way. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Do you have any questions for Alan?
Cruise ships with hospitals in tow.
Yeah.
That could be a new commercial.
There you go.
Yeah, could you see the Carnival Cruise Line now? You know, hey, come down to Belize, man. We have the Carnival Cruise. We got the hospital ship in tow. All you fully vaccinated people will be fully insured against the COVID you're not supposed to have because you are fully vaccinated. But just in case, Carnival is providing Carnival 2, the hospital ship that you see following behind you. Close enough, but not too close.
So my question is, what happens to that hospital after people get COVID? What do we do with them? What do they do with them then? They just keep them there forever?
Yeah, do they go back?
No,
that's a really good question.
They'll take them off the main cruise lines, Royal Caribbean, Carnival, Celebrity, Princess, put them on the little medical ship, and they'll care for them and take them back to the U.S.
Oh, so once they're off the ship, they're off the ship. They don't get to go back? Alan?
Well, okay. Let's say let's, because you remember this, this is a Western Caribbean itinerary they're doing, right? So they stop in Mexico, they stop in Belize, they stop in either Grand Cayman or what's the other port? Anyway, and then they go to Honduras, right? Honduras, that's our neighbor, southeast from us. So with the for the duration of these four stops, that's a seven-day cruise, you know, whenever somebody is test positive, then that's when they're taken off that ship and go on the medical ship. So I guess I would assume they go back to the States on that medical ship because you need that 5 to 10 days quarantine period away from people, right? So I don't assume they'll put them back onto the main cruise line.
Yeah, if nobody wants COVID-positive people among the fully vaccinated because they might give it to them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You know,
you
and no nation way. Wants them. Yeah, you don't want COVID. This is like a leprosy ship now. It's like, I mean, I'm not an actual disease I'm talking about, but in terms of isolation, this is the same demonization. So, you know, I should do a parody, Leprosy Cruises. Be totally isolated from humanity. Shirley?
You know, because you hear about when, like in other countries, they have to quarantine themselves and they basically go to a hotel and they have to pay the expense. So I wonder if there's an expense if you get COVID and you have to be transferred to this hospital ship and then quarantined there, is there an extra charge for your vacation?
Alan, I bet you there must be.
I don't know how it works. Like I said, I'm gonna investigate it this next week because I just learned about it this week. I saw four
follow-up report,
and I thought, whoa, isn't that a fifth ship out there? Then my coworker said, oh, you didn't know about that? That's a medical ship. He follows all the cruise lines, and if anybody tests positive, they go on that ship. I go, what? We have a medical ship following the cruise lines? So I just learned about it this week. So this coming week, I'll be doing my little research and see what I can find.
Yeah, I'm putting it in the calendar for next week. Medical ship follows cruise lines. That is so hysterical. Go ahead, Shirley. Please.
So this medical ship is for all the different cruise lines, or each one has their own medical ship following them?
No. No, it's one for the four main lines that was in port on Wednesday.
So if you get COVID, you get put on the ship with all these passengers from all this other line. And I mean, what do they do? I mean, this is a hospital ship. You know, I mean, are these people going to be screaming for refunds? It's like, I can't imagine the hospital ship has gourmet food, movies, entertainment, and a bunch of other stuff. It's a hospital ship. this story is going to break big time because these people are going to come back and they're going to start talking and it's going to get on social media. And all of a sudden we're going to have oh, this is fascinating. Alan, congratulations.
Oh, for sure.
Nice job breaking the story here. You know, so I got to tell Shelby, and then she'll start talking about it. We'll probably find out some more Tuesday. So if you want to call Shelby on Tuesday, if you can, that'd be great. Okay. Uh-huh. I want to get to Shirley's report now. Alan, do you have any questions for Shirley? Do you have any you know, breaking gun questions that have been permeating your brain this week?
No, not really. Like I said, I stay away from guns. In my mind, gun is there's a lot of reasons that I've learned from Shirley that you can do with gun, and you know, you can do it could be your hobby. But growing up, in my mind, gun is bad and it's a bad thing. I want to stay away from it. If I have it, I'm gonna have it for protection. Somebody mess with me, boom, I'm gonna scare you, or I'm gonna shoot your leg.
The leg thing doesn't work, by the way, because someone with a knife will still keep running at you if you shoot him in the leg. Shirley, we should dismiss that one right now. We need to talk about that. But Alan, I want to get you to a gun range here. In fact, if DC Projects in Florida, if Shirley can do it, or Jim Dykes with Florida Carry, or me, or somebody, we're going to get you out to a gun range, and we're going to videotape it, and we're going to have fun. Alan Dawson.
All right. Sounds good. You know what?
Alan Dawson, target shooter.
I dropped off my passport at the embassy this past Tuesday. So next week I'm supposed to go pick up my visa, passport with a visa, and I'm heading up there in April. I should be up in the U.S. in April. And I'm going
to
be
Are you coming to Florida?
Traveling,
or are you going to California?
I'm going to go to California. First. And then eventually I'm going to head back to, I need to spend some time in Atlanta, Alabama, and Chicago. Then maybe I head down to Florida for a weekend right before I come home or something. So I'll be there for a while. So I'll get on that. I'll be getting on that gun range with Shirley.
We're going to work on it. We're definitely going to work on it.
Yeah, for sure.
A round of applause for both of you. Okay, Alan, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is great. And the more you find out about this hospital ghost ship that's following the cruise ships, the better. This is absolutely amazing. All right.
Oh, yeah. I'll fill you in next week.
Okay, let me get your contact info.
Have a good day, yeah?
Let's get your contact info real quick. And you had the best tagline so far, so let's get that. And then we'll go on to Shirley. Did you leave? That was Alan Dawson with Belize Tours of something or other. I forgot what the name is. Anyway, we'll get back to you next time. So, Shirley, what's going on in gun world?
Going on in the gun world. Well, Jim brought up something last week, and I've been trying to get a little research done. I haven't got very far. Remember, uh-huh. He was talking about constitutional carry. And
right.
Then we started talking about follow the dollar. And I went, well, there's 2.5, 2.8 million concealed carry licenses in the state of Florida. So, well,
uh-huh.
Where does all that money go to?
That's a good question.
And so I'm trying to find out that it goes to, let me see if I can word this, make sure I don't say it wrong. Hold on.
Well, I'll translate it into English. I'm pretty good at that. I'll translate government into English. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, then maybe you can explain this.
I'll try. If not, we'll get Jim. He's coming on half an hour anyway. I love Friday lineups. We just have, it's every half hour we have a new person. It's great.
Yeah. Wow. Where did he? Hold on. Give me a second.
That's okay. It's only live radio.
It's only live radio. You can entertain them while I look something up here real quick.
Actually, let me play my Biden PSA for COVID. So let me just do you have it right there? Or do you want, or because I got something I can play real quick.
When I was talking to Jim, I asked him about that, and he said the funds can only be spent on concealed carry licensor program.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is. I want a definition of what that program is and who's actually getting that money.
Ask Jim as soon as he comes on. That might be a good thing to find out about. But yeah. So we should introduce you again, Shirley Wetchall, firearms instructor, DC Project. You're the Florida coordinator, if I remember, or a director. I'm not sure what's your official title. And we should remind folks, because you're still new to the program.
Right. DC Project, each state has a state director. I am the Florida state director for DC Project, which
Excellent.
Is DC Project is a nationwide group of women that are just fighting to secure our Second Amendment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all different type walks of life, moms, single women, college students, and we're just all working hard to preserve our Second Amendment because we know how important it is. And some of us have our own personal stories as to why it's important and how everybody gets to where they are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and we're grassroots. We're a fundraiser group. We're not backed by any million-dollar backer. We work hard to get financial backing so that we can go to D.C., go to our state capitals and meet with our representatives and put a face to the women that are supporting the Second Amendment. And we're the countervisual, counter voice to, gun groups like Moms Demand Action. So
no, it's
that's
absolutely
our
critical.
Goal.
We've talked about that before, that the more women that are gun legislative and other and gun advocates, the better, because the impact that let's face the reality, the psychological impact of a mom, with kids, going up to any of the state legislatures, look, I have to protect my kids, and this is my family. You got 2 million illegal. Slow down, Greg. You've got 2 million illegal aliens flooding this country right now, and you're not stopping them, So it's going to be up to me, and so if you're denying me protection of my kids. Who the hell do you think you are? That's a hell of a lot more, has more impact than, Bubba in the pickup truck saying, well, damn it, I'm an American. I got my right to have my guns, and I got my pickup on the, I got my truck, and I got my gun, and that's just the way it is. Anybody who wants to take it away, take it from my cold, dead fingers. I mean, I love those guys. Don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing, these folks, but what I'm saying is the psychological impact is different. That's just the reality.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, go ahead.
And with the increased purchase women are making on the firearms and the training they're getting, I'm
mm-hmm.
getting more and more women coming out to learn how to safely handle a firearm. And I think that's very
good.
Important, too, that people, men and women, need to take classes to ensure that they can
safely handle a firearm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're
like I said,
advocates of education. You know, we want to educate everybody on how to do that to prevent accidents and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but like
you said,
it's been
a while since
up.
I've been shooting. Yeah. Well, are you tracking that? See, here's something I found out too. I was going to, depending whether to do a show on this or a topic, but the illegal alien crimes are not really being tracked. The FBI doesn't want to know. The Brandon, you know, insurrection doesn't want to know how many of the crimes out there. In fact, they're not even reporting them. I think it was an illegal alien that killed those cops in L.A. And they're not reporting, you know, they're not distinguishing. You'll hear a person, you know, committed such and such a crime, but they don't give their immigration status. I think that would should be required of all journalists that if they're good, not by law, but I mean by ethical, you know, behavior, the code of journalism, that if someone's illegal, you should report that. People need to know that.
Oh.
That's a significant factor. Go ahead.
It is. And I've talked to and I've met some, a mother whose son was killed by someone that was here illegally.
Wow.
So that it's happening in the, It's happening whether it's covered in the media or not. Some people, when you talk to law enforcement, you know, they'll tell you, yeah, you got to be careful right now. You know, lock your cars, make sure you're being safe, because it's not always the way the media portrays it. And we're learning that more and more, that the media isn't really always about facts. It's about what the agenda is.
Oh, no kidding.
So, it's kind of, I mean, I was brought up thinking, oh, you know, reporters are awesome. They just go out there and get all the facts and give it all to you and just give you the facts. But, yeah, not so much anymore is what I've learned.
Well, I grew up in an environment of lies, so I have an advantage. I was skeptical of adults from birth just because I was lied to so often. and so for me, it was a natural skepticism. So I think I'm in the right place with Action Radio. Do you think the DC Project would be interested if you have the resources and energy and people to actually do that, to put out a report or go over the crime stats or the news stories or things like that and put out an illegal alien crime report or just maybe one story, you know, and maybe hold either a press conference or a press release documenting how many of the crimes that are being currently committed, what percent are illegal aliens? I mean, that's something that people would want to know, especially in this election year. Is that something you guys could take on?
Like you brought up a good thing, resources. We're a volunteer group, so resources of money and time is, you know, limited. But that's a different avenue to look at. Also, when we're doing presentations to our legislators, if in each state, if we have even one story, like every Tuesday, I do a Teal for 2A Tuesday, which shows how an individual used a firearm illegal. They might have a concealed carry license, or they might have been at home, legally defended their life with a firearm. So maybe there'd be a story that, you know, we could, each state or the state we're meeting with, we could bring that up. You know, there are illegal immigrants here that are, you know, taking people's lives, or, you know, firearms are used to save another person's life, and it happens to be that they're an illegal alien. Having the media,
there's a difference.
You know, reports on that, though, and truthfully report on that, I don't know how you'd find that out. Because if they're not collecting that information, how would we know it? You know?
Well, you can just go by the news stories, you know, and you can speculate, as I do. I said, you know, is this person an illegal alien? You know, especially if you have someone that might have come in from south of the border, from countries that are south of the border, but people are coming into our country from everywhere. If they are non-English speaking, that's a pretty good indication, because immigrants legal immigrants are required to learn English. So there's your first clue. If someone doesn't speak English, that there's a good chance that they're here illegally. Not always, you know. But I'm saying obviously this isn't tourists or visa holders or things like that. But I mean, people that are here caught committing crimes, you know, their immigration status should automatically be checked. That's the first thing you do, is to find out whether it's a federal, you know, deal or whether it's a local matter. But I got an article here, illegal immigrants and crime, and I really want to make this point: the language is everything. Say you, I'm not accusing you, but I'm saying, but you can't say illegal immigrant. That term makes no sense, because an immigrant is a legal person, is legally entitled to be in the United States. They've been invited by the government of the United States to be here. That's what an immigrant is. An illegal alien is someone who is not here by government permission, by invitation. They just showed up, you know, and that includes all of Brandon's illegal aliens. So there's a huge difference. But the reason that the left pushes the term illegal immigrant is to confuse you. It's to confuse the term, because you know that immigrants are legal, but illegal aliens are not. So if they can blur that distinction, you know, that's why they talk about, that's why they, you know, when they say, well, we have to stop crime, let's take guns from the law abiding. Okay. That's a contradiction. That's irrational. That makes no sense. That's like confiscating cars from the sober drivers, you know, to stop drunk drivers. That makes no sense. Sober drivers aren't the problem, you know, or going to a bank and, you know, removing all the depositors to stop bank robberies. That's irrational. And yet, when it comes to guns, it's exactly the psychology that they use. You can use that, by the way. Feel free to take any example I give you. You know, but that's that they blur that distinction. Well, we've got to stop gun violence. Let's ask you about that. In New York, we have to stop gun violence, not criminals, you know, not people who use guns illegally. We have to stop gun violence, which means we have to have gun restrictions, which means we have to gun control, which means we have to take guns, they're not saying it, from the honest, law-abiding citizens who aren't the problem, who only want to defend themselves. That's the rhetorical trap that the left always uses. Speaking of which, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I know that the terminology, I've been learning about terminology, and there's a book, Good Guns, Bad Guy, by Dan Wolf. That's very good. He points out that there's terminology that we just start using, even as people that support firearms and firearm safety, and just because the media uses it all the time, mass shootings. Well, you know, terminology should be mass killings. Doesn't, you know, there's just certain things the media uses that all of a sudden everybody's using those terminologies. Just like I have never heard pandemic so much as I have in the last 2 years in all my life. So and then all of a sudden they keep repeating that word, and that word comes easily, just like you're saying, immigrant, illegal immigrant. If they keep using that terminology, we all associate that as someone that's here illegally. And you made a good point. And then, so there's a lot of different terms that are like that. And I'm trying to watch that when I speak about firearms and gun safety to make sure I don't fall into that little hole that they're trying to dig for us.
Well, it's actually gun owner safety, isn't it? If I could be picky.
Exactly. Gun owner safety.
Gun safety is designing a safe gun. That's a manufacturer issue.
Yeah. Firearm safety. That's another one right there. So there's a lot of things that we just use because we hear it all the time and we associate it to one thing, but yet another group might be looking at it a different way. So, yeah, I need to start choosing my words. So. A little more carefully in that aspect.
Oh, it's a challenge. I do it all the time. I mean, why do you think I consciously say Brandon or the Brandon insurrection? Whenever I read, I can't read the terms President Biden. I have to skip over them and rephrase it in my head and try and make it look smooth as I'm going through these articles because I can't say that because he's got an ongoing investigation. And we'll talk about this. I'm going to sort of mention this throughout the show, that Pennsylvania, the court, the lower court, and it's going to go to their Supreme Court, but the lower court just overruled, just disqualified all their mail-in ballots. So we're, you know, Action Radio is declaring today Trump won Pennsylvania. No one else is doing it.
I saw that you put that, and that when I saw that article, I went, so now what does that mean? So the first thing what happens is they go and they appeal, they're going to put an appeal in, right? Because, you know, now.
But it doesn't matter. But right now, right now, even though it's on hold, you know, right now, Trump won Pennsylvania.
So that should, you know, start changing things right away.
It should.
But, you know, the legal system doesn't work that quickly.
I do. Actually, Jonathan was the one. Jonathan declared it yesterday. Listen to Jonathan Mosley's legal report, you know, about an hour and a half into the show. And I think it was fairly quickly he came out. We talked about Pennsylvania. And so, yeah, they have declared, he declared that those ballots are invalid. So then you disqualify 2.1 million mail-in ballots, you know, almost all of which went for Brandon. Then Trump wins. That's why I declared it. Now, is this premature? Is there going to be another court case? Could I be reversed on this? Sure. But right now, I mean, even if they put this on hold, and Jim's going to argue with me. In fact, Jim's listening to this whole conversation right now. I'll bring him on in a little bit. But the point is that right now, Trump has won Pennsylvania. Again, he won it the first time, and then they did the fraudulent count, right? And they declared for Brandon. He's won it again, and I wanted to beat Trump declaring that Trump won. Just because I'm having fun with this. But I've got four articles that I might cover this Monday.
Well, keep putting it out there, and it'll be like the media using their buzzwords. That'll be like everybody will start saying, did you just hear?
Yeah, Trump won.
Just reported. Yeah.
That's a really good point. I'm actually doing, you know, leftist media brainwashing. This is great. I'm like one of the group now. I feel empowered. Here's one term I want to mention, and then I've probably kept you from whatever you wanted to report this morning. Always use the term freedom rifle. Never use the term assault weapon. And I've got a glossary.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I got a whole glossary of terms.
Yeah,
like that.
I did hear that when you were talking about that on one of the. I forget who you were talking to. But also the other thing, that big thing is sporting rifle.
Sporting rifle, yeah. Do you know who came up with the sporting rifle test? Do you know where that comes from? I said, do you know where the sporting rifle test comes from?
No.
I think it's the 1933 Nazi gun law. They were the first ones to come up with the sporting rifle test as distinguishing from military rifles to keep guns from the Jews. Whoopi Goldberg should look into that a little bit. Anyway, what do you want to talk about this morning?
the sporting rifle
test is in the – well, this is one of the benefits of being a member of the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, is I got the benefit of all the research of how Senator Chris Dodd's father, I forget what his name was, probably Chris Dodd Sr., took basically the Nazi gun laws. This is what they're saying. Brought them over to the United States, translated them, and most of that became our 1968 Gun Control Act with the sporting purposes test, with a bunch of other things, with the restrictions, the background checks, the whole bit. And obviously they were changed, you know, to adapt to American law. But the thing is that the gun restrictions, you know, a lot of those origins are in, you know, of course, the other countries like, you know, communist China and other dictatorships around the world just have blanket gun bans. And the Nazis eventually did, too. But as they were doing the registration and the earlier control things, that's what I think it was 1933 that the law was taken from, the sporting purposes test. And that's what ended up in our laws. Check out Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership and early firearms laws. It's a fascinating, the story. It's amazing how this all came about. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to check that out because, you know, just like we're saying, words, it's all about the wording that we're using. Assault rifles came from, I mean, it was never meant to be assault rifles. And now to change that, freedom rifles, sporting rifles, sport rifles. And, you know, it's like you were talking about, what did you say? Because a rifle can't assault you. It's the person that's, you know, holding
a rifle can't assault you.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually a military term. Yeah. Like I say, well, I might as well bring Jim on now. He'll confirm this, that there is an assault weapon is a, if I get this right, a selective fire weapon. So the military definition is a firearm that can be fired fully automatically, semi-automatically, and I think single shot, being select fire. That's part of the criteria. Jim, have I got that about right?
So you are correct about what would make a military rifle. I have not seen the term assault weapon in military manuals, though. So I'm not sure that you can blame the military for that term.
Okay, so you know what? One thing we should take a look at here. This might be interesting for all of us. I do it every once in a while. Switzerland has the small arms survey, and they actually break down. I think it's the small arms. There's like, you know, there's like light weapons and small arms. And small arms would be the things that we have personally, handguns, rifles, things like that. Light weapons would be bazookas, mortars, you know, things that require one or two people. It's an interesting breakdown. And so when I think of the Second Amendment, I think of mostly, although I don't want to limit it, small arms, the things that one person can carry. So it's an interesting, if you ever read the Swiss, that's where the place has had the small arms survey. Jim, do you know what I'm talking about? Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, the military talks about crew-served weapons, so we have something similar to that.
Yeah, interesting. Anyway, Shirley, before we get to Jim, what did you want to talk about today? I keep doing this. I have all these questions.
Well,
for people.
Yeah. I mean, we just talked. This is good. This is good. But I'm really excited about next Friday. I'm going to have a guest on the show.
Ooh.
And it's really cool. Someone I met when I started competing that was at a Louisiana match, and her name is Jeanette Sharp.
Okay.
She is, her and her husband are from New Zealand, and they come here and they live 7 to 8 months out of the year.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to, you know, talk to her, find out when she picked up her first firearm, what age, how she got into competition, because she was also a let's see. She won awards out there too. 1996, she was top woman in the IPSC shooter in New Zealand. And so there's some really interesting stuff, that, stories that she can tell us. And then also find out she loves, they love the United States. So to find out what is happening now that might be parallel to what happened in New Zealand before they started buyback, doing the government buyback. Yeah,
well, I don't think you can have personal farms. I don't think you can own personal farms in New Zealand now. I think like Australia, I think they've removed that ability of people to actually own their own firearms, which makes sense as why your guest is here. That's my first question, is what is the state of gun laws and when did it change?
Yeah, so we're going to get some more information from her. And, yeah, my curiosity is, you know, things that are happening now because, mm-hmm. you know, the art that happened started to happen in New Zealand before they started taking away their firearms or the ARs. I think the gun confiscation was the AR just recently. And, you know, we need to be aware of that so we don't repeat what happened over there and make sure that, you know, we don't end up in that same situation. But I think you're going to really enjoy talking to her. She's an awesome person, just a great friend. And like I said, always in the shooting community, I'm always meeting some really wonderful people. And having her as my first guest, I'm really excited.
Oh, wonderful. See, isn't this fun? The more you get into the show, the more you can do. You're bringing on guests, you're writing legislation soon. You're awesome. Let's give her a round of applause. Where's my round of applause here? Quickly. Oh, scroll. Up back at the other side here. Here we go. This is for you. So this provides a good segue into the question I have for both of you, and then I'm going to kind of let you guys talk for a while because it's fun. This is why I have you back-to-back on these reports. But the question is, and especially for your New Zealand guests too, New Zealand has a Barker convoy. Australia has one. I'm in contact with one of the folks in the Australian convoy in Canberra. I'm working really hard to get connected with the truckers. I mean, I have a Canadian reporter now, Laura Abolese, is now our Canadian reporter who calls in on Tuesday. So we're keeping really in touch with what's happening in Canada. But I've offered, you know, Action Radio to help them write the legislation to bring about the changes that they want rather than just kind of, you know, begging and complaining to the legislators. I think our way is going to be much more effective. But the question is this a good time to be also talking about restoring firearms rights to Canadians and to Australians and New Zealanders and anybody else that might be holding a truck rally in Europe, like the Norwegians, the Belgians, the Dutch, I think it's Norwegians and the Dutch, and other places that are holding truck rallies. Is now the time? Shirley, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think if anywhere you're getting like-minded people together, if it works in that arena, yeah, that'd be a time to start bringing stuff like that up. Because there's always, you know, the more the people, the more numbers you have, the more influence you have. So it might be something they want to start reviewing and bringing up at that point.
Is this something DC Project could help with by chance? Maybe offer your services, you know, to the truckers if I can get you all connected. If I have a connection, everybody in Action Radio is going to have a connection. I mean, that's how I hope to work it. So that, you know, so DC Project could contact the truckers directly. Would that be something you might want to propose to them, or is it, I don't know.
What, as far as their firearms in the country?
Well, me personally, the reason I'm asking this is kind of a rhetorical question because I think it's a golden opportunity. I think it's the perfect opportunity. The truckers are right there. You got 50,000 trucks sitting outside Parliament in Ottawa. You know, and if they're going to remove mandates, they might as well remove their illegal firearm mandates as well. It just seems to follow.
Right. I mean, yeah, if they're together like that, I totally agree with that. You know, get what you can when your numbers are together. But as far as, you know, DC Pride, we're a small group, we're growing, but you got to watch for me anyway, my time and money as a resource to help others.
Right.
But if there's something that, you know, we can share our experience with, yeah, no problem. As far as, I don't know how involved we can get in helping them to get something passed. I mean, like it takes a lot of time, you know, a lot of time and effort right now to make sure that we hang on to our Second Amendment. No, but if there's something that we can share our experience on, oh, definitely. I mean, that's what I'm all about. Like reading my story, sharing my experience. If I can help someone else, awesome.
Okay, good. I'll see what I can do about once I do get a connection. I'll report. We have an Action Radio chat group of all the reporters, and so I'll see if I can find out something for that. Jim, do you have questions for Shirley, or Shirley, you for Jim, or do you guys have between Florida Carry and DC Project? No, they got you both here.
I have a question. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Jim, remember we were talking about the where the funds go for our concealed carry license here in Florida? They go to the concealed carry licensure program?
Yes.
I'm still trying to find out what those are. And I kind of did a little research. I don't know if I just have to send an email out to the Department of Agriculture. Do you know how I'd actually find out what that means?
Yeah, I should be able to give you the link in the statute where it says that. So the funding goes directly to Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, and it can only be used for their licensing division for a concealed carry permit.
Okay, so it just stays in their
Right. It never makes it into makes it into the general fund. It goes directly to Department of Agriculture and has to stay earmarked for consumer services for firearms licensing.
Wow, they must have a lot of money.
Well, that's why they started opening, if you remember, they started opening a bunch of regional locations where you could go and walk in and do your concealed carry permit. That came from that huge amount of money that was coming in. And then they also used it to put in place the mechanism that started allowing you to go into local tax collectors' offices to apply for your firearms license. So that all came from that fund.
Yeah, I would have thought that would have saved them money, having the tax collector do it instead of having the overhead of their own office. So I thought that would be a – because I know I used to work for the tax collector, and, you know, I know the tax collector collects a fee from you to do it there. So,
right,
but, yeah.
And I think it probably in the long run will reduce some of the funding, but there were upfront costs because you had to put in things like the networking and computers to tie into the Department of Agriculture website because they electronically upload it. So there were some upfront costs that had to go in.
Oh, yeah, with fingerprint and all that. Yeah, I get that. Okay. All right.
Anything else from D.C. as far as
the
– oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, please, feel free.
Before, but do you guys have the date set for the walk that goes – with the Okeechobee open carry walk that you go from point A to go fishing? Do you have a date on that?
I do not, no. I'll look and see if I can find one and send it to you.
Yeah, because I'd like to see how many D.C. Project women we could get in that as well, or non-D.C. Project, just people in general. Join you.
Well, see, now I want to have a Second Amendment open carry barbecue. I'm still working on that, and Jim has advised me of the various restrictions and things that we need to do this with our gun socks and pictures and all kinds of things, or, you know, maybe some of the you know, we'll figure something out, but for interesting art on our gun socks. But yeah, civil disobedience is a good thing. But the only problem is you don't want to get arrested and lose your you know, the rights that you have because of that. So it's always interesting to try and find a way to protest, make it obvious what you're doing, and still, you know, not give law enforcement or give them a reason that they have to do something about it. You know, so that's always my my challenge there. Anything else in D.C.? You've got a big problem. You got Brandon, you know, doing the big gun thing. You know, are they coming with any initiatives, or are they just talking? Is he just, you know, spouting air because he doesn't want people to look at how everything else is falling apart? Is this a distraction, or do they actually have some serious legislative stuff they want to dump onto Congress?
Well, I think it's a little of both. I mean, they always like to do the little distraction. Sadly to say, we had to – I think I already told you this – we had to cancel our trip to D.C. because of the shutdown and the restrictions. And right now, I think D.C. now requires you to have a vaccine passport to go indoors on certain things, if
correct? Welcome to D.C. Yeah, I get the papers. So you present your papers. You present your 14th Amendment discrimination papers. Yeah. So you do not have the equal protection of the laws anymore. We're modeling this after a well-known regime in human history. Yeah. It's a good thing. Yeah, right, exactly. I have a friend who's German and just freaks out every time I do a bad accent. Morning. What's that?
I said, what did you put in your coffee this morning?
Oh, you should have heard yesterday's show. Yesterday's show got hysterical. I mean, Jonathan had just been through 6 hours in front of the January 6th, you know, insurrection cover-up committee, you know, the real insurrection, putting Brandon in the White House. And he was punchy. I don't know what I had in my coffee, but between the two of us, and then I had a caller, Josh from Illinois, that was calling in, and it just, and poor Cindy Cagle, who did the Medical Freedom Report, she's caught between all of us being totally loopy. Listen to yesterday's show. It was a landmark in totally silly humor, but yeah, I do accents all the time. Yes, the Russian tools.
Yeah,
next time
that.
We do that with the Russian laws. Yes. Okay, fine. Yes. Putin is not going to have war.
Part of that. I part of that when you were doing, I listened to part of that. But when you're talking about last January 6th, someone I was speaking with, I met, but they were there, and they were talking about how planned some of the events were that the media was getting shots of. I mean, they actually witnessed how they were just doing a set, like a movie set, you know, put the police car here, make it sound over here, make it run from there to there, and do it two or three times. And I actually watched it do that. I wish that I got the name, his name and stuff, but that was before I got into all this with Action Radio. But I was like, really? They did all that? He goes, oh, yeah. A couple times we saw stuff where they just planted stuff so the media was there. Okay, we have cameras there. We'll do this run. This car will go up here. And stuff like that. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, if you can find that, that'd be great. And if you get a chance to review our Thursday show, just kind of start with yesterday and go back with Jonathan Mosley's report, because Jonathan was there January 6th. Josie, our Latino reporter, she was there also. They both called live from the Capitol January 6th. We've got that on tape. So you go back to our January 6th, 2021 show. You've got the show this year, the anniversary show. So I would go from January 6th anniversary Thursday up through now. It's like two or three shows. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's probably maybe four shows by now. And then go back a year ago to the one, the January 6th one, where they actually were calling in. That'll give you a whole bunch of background. But I'd love to hear about that, because the fact that things were staged, we know Ray Epps was staged. We know that, I don't know, but I know. You know what I'm saying? That Bullhorn guy. And the fact that they removed the restriction signs to make it look like it was not a restricted area. I call it the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In for a reason, because that's what it was. You know, these people were essential to the real coup, which took place below the Capitol when the members of Congress got the talk that nobody's talking about, you know, where I think they were told, if you want to keep your committee chairs and your privileges, you're going to put Brandon in the White House. I mean, they didn't actually say that, but that's what they said. And I know it, but I do know it, you know, kind of thing. So this is speculation. In fact, a press release went out to that effect. I don't want to take any more of Jim's report, because I want to get to that. But do you have a last comment on that, Shirley? And you're welcome to stay, of course. But I want to make sure we get to Jim's issues, and then I'll play his theme. I got to make you a theme too, so I'll work on that pretty soon too. Contact information
okay.
as well.
Now,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm eager to hear Jim's issues. I didn't know he had any issues, Jim, but that's okay. But,
well, I wouldn't exactly phrase it that way, but issues.
Oh, Jim, I definitely would phrase it that way. I have a lot of issues.
But no, I'm going to have to bug out here. I've got an appointment. But just if anybody wants to get more information about DC Project, go to dcproject.info and to the website. And look forward to having Jeanette Sharp on the show next Friday and talking to her. So if you have any questions on that you'd like me to present to her, let me know as well. And it's been awesome as usual, and you guys have a great day, but I'll be staying on for a while and listen to see what Jim has to say.
Sounds good. Wonderful. Yeah, you're really good at this, so I'm really glad to have you on the show, and it's just wonderful. Let's get to Jim. Thank you, Shirley, and let's get to Jim's theme. I will have a theme for you. I haven't quite, you know, figured out what I want to do yet, but this is what I made for Jim.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle, 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. and now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
Yes, the man with the issues, or the man who has the issues, depending on your point of view, the one and only Jim Dice.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That's a badge I'll probably wear. I'm okay with that.
Hey, you're among friends. You know, we're becoming one big happy family. Actually, bigger now. We've got Laura Avalese from Canada now checks in. So we got Alan, who was on this morning, from Belize. We got Laura up in Canada, and I hope to expand our international correspondence as much as possible. We need Australia, New Zealand, and Israel, where I have contacts. I just don't have someone, you know, regularly to do to come on the show and let us know what's happening in those countries. But we're going international. And it's only a matter of time before we're helping folks write, you know, legislation in their country. They're going to write it. I'm not going to write it. They're going to write it because it's their country. But I can certainly help give them the means and the technology and the methodology to get that accomplished. So that's what I'm working on. What are you working on? What are you building?
Oh, all kinds of fun stuff.
Okay.
We're still pushing the Florida Senate president to bring up a bill for constitutional carry in Florida. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where that goes. We're getting good response from our members on getting emails in. We'll be sending out another request either today or tomorrow, asking people to contact Senator Simpson. So hopefully
we can do that right
some
now.
Movement there.
And if you want to do it right now, do you have like a phone number or an email address for them that we can contact them directly?
I will post the link into the gun group because, as usual, it's very long. So,
yeah.
But
that's the Action Radio Gun Group on Facebook. If anybody wants to go to that after or even during the show and see what we have posted, because this is where and this is like Friday Gun Day, so a lot of the folks are posting things there, and that's a great way to keep up. It's a public group; anybody can access it and see what we've got.
And interestingly, kind of a good segue between that and also Shirley's slot this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Alabama and their push for constitutional carry because they're doing something similar in Alabama, although they actually have started hearing the bill in Alabama. It passed its first committee vote.
Okay, good.
Was it
nicely lopsided or was it narrow?
It was narrow. It was along party lines. It passed out of committee 6-4. But interestingly, very much like in Florida, you had the State Sheriff's Association opposing.
What?
Yeah, that is not uncommon. And I would imagine that in Alabama, much like in Florida, the president of the State Sheriff Association is probably from a large city because that's who typically ends up being in charge of it and making their policies. And you have had numerous sheriffs now who have broken away from the Sheriff's Association in Alabama and said that the association does not speak for them.
Okay.
But it was interesting, the two big arguments that the Sheriff's Association made. One of them is that you would lose an investigative tool which allows you to arrest very serious criminals. And the example that he gave was Timothy McVeigh, who was originally detained after being pulled over for a traffic violation for having a concealed weapon without a permit. And this representative from the Sheriff's Association said, this is a perfect example of how, you know, this law that requires you to have a permit helps law enforcement. Cam Edwards on the Bearing Arms website did a great job of explaining that it's very interesting that an Alabama senator Alabama law enforcement officer attempting to explain why Alabama needs to have a concealed weapons permit as the only valid example had to reach back to 1995 to find an example which happened in another state, Oklahoma.
Right.
and which happened in a state which has since then adopted constitutional carry.
Yeah, and the act itself was an act of terrorism. You know, it was a horrible act. You know, and but this is the thing we've stated over and over again. And well, tell me if this is in the article too. The point that I've been trying to make is that you cannot base, you know, the restriction. Well, first of all, you can't have a restriction of rights. That's what the Constitution's for. But the logic of trying to restrict or permit rights based on the actions of criminals or terrorists in this case is irrational. And I was just talking to Shirley about this earlier. It's like trying to stop drunk driving by confiscating the cars of the sober people. Doesn't make any sense. And yet that's what this is all about. They keep blurring that line. They blur that line between criminal and law-abiding citizen. If we somehow restrict all the law-abiding citizens, the criminals will stop. Well, no, actually just the opposite will happen. But it's so clearly, you know, that's all they have to reach back to, because the law-abiding citizens are by definition law-abiding. They don't commit crimes. So the proper, you know, representation of the right of the Constitution, which is the right to keep and bear arms, it doesn't say the right to keep and bear arms by permit, by restriction, by you know, the public good or a compelling state interest. It doesn't say any of that crap, because it doesn't count. It doesn't matter. It's not part of the supreme law of the land. But it's just funny how these people, Timothy McVeigh, interesting example. Now, here's something that's totally off topic, but I remember hearing a special about Timothy McVeigh. Apparently, he was a combat medic at one point, and saved many lives. So it's just, you know, it's interesting, you know, people are multidimensional, and how he got from that to bombing the Oklahoma building, which I still think was more than that. You know, that does not look like a fertilizer bomb. That looks like a demolition charge, but we'll talk about that another day, unless you want to. But had you heard that before about Timothy McVeigh? That his combat record actually was pretty good.
I know that Timothy McVeigh was in the Army. I think that he was actually an artilleryman.
Okay,
He may have had combat lifesaver training, which a lot of people in the military have. Right. Interestingly, though, I met and talked to his platoon leader he was in the Army, who told me that while there was nothing that he ever saw that would convince him that McVeigh would do what he did, he did say that virtually everyone in the platoon knew that something was not quite right with him. And no one could really put their finger on exactly what it was. But he said he was just a strange character, and everyone knew there was something just a little off about him.
I know the military tries to screen for that, but do you think he slipped through the cracks, or it was like, you know, low recruitment those days and he got in? You know, wouldn't that be cause for some kind of an evaluation? Or not? Yeah. Or is it wartime?
Well, yeah, no, I think, you know, it wasn't anything that he could point to that he said would show that he had a mental illness or anything. He just said there was something strange about him. I mean, there are people who are strange throughout life, and, you know, not everyone who is strange is going to go off and do something like this. But, you know, a lot of times you'll hear after the fact people, when something like this happens, they'll say, I knew something wasn't quite right about them. I couldn't really put my finger on it. So,
yeah. And you're not responsible for that, because you don't know, you know, you don't want to go, you know, sort of labeling somebody as something unless, you know, you have an idea. But the other extreme, of course, is, you know, when a kid posts on Facebook that he's going to shoot up his school, and that seems to me a pretty obvious sign, and then actually does
right.
it. You know, at that point, you can say, you know what? There's a threat. There's an obvious threat.
Right. Yeah. When someone is making threats, then that's significantly different than something about this person.
Wrong here. Yeah. It's really, I mean, the whole idea of psychology, it's a fascinating side. Okay. Maybe that was, I thought I heard of that about him, because it could be, this is years ago. So, you know, that's why I say it. But I'm speculating or trying to remember something to let folks know. If I absolutely know, and I got a source for you, I'll tell you that too. But interesting. Okay.
And then continuing on with Alabama, the other concerning thing there was a quote that came from one of the sheriffs who came out and said he supported constitutional carry. And one of his concerns that he raised about supporting constitutional carry was very similar to what I said might be the reason that you're not seeing the NRA support it in Florida. And he said that his concern is that part of the funds for getting your concealed carry license in Alabama goes to the sheriff's department, and he was concerned with losing that funding stream.
Well, then we'll create another funding stream. And that's stupid.
I thought it was interesting that he thought there might be a way to oppose allowing someone to exercise their constitutional right because it would cause his police department to take a fiscal hit.
So we're getting non-reason reasons here. This is really interesting. But it's what is it about law enforcement, the bad part about law enforcement, that feels the need to curb, you know, the honest people? I mean, they're taking away rights or advocating rights denial for people that by definition do not commit crimes. No one's granting constitutional carry to criminals. No one's granting constitutional carry to people with any kind of a record, you know, or things like that. So the idea of limiting the honest people, again, there's a disconnect between that and the criminals, unless it's job security, unless they just want the power. And I've met people, I was in law enforcement with Customs for about a year and a half, you know, until they trained a whole bunch of younger, better agents. And, you know, they wanted to kind of put me out to pasture. So I left early. I said, you people, let me do what I wanted you to train me to do, idiots. Anyway, but the point is that I got a lot of personal, you know, knowledge of folks, and I was able to talk to people. There's an arrogance. There's an arrogance in law enforcement. There's a certain percentage of law enforcement that believes that they're the only ones that are qualified to have guns, that they don't want other people to do it. I don't know whether, and I don't know if there's some like a job security aspect that we're the ones that take care of people. We're the ones that should do it. But there is a problem. There is a problem in law enforcement that that somehow swears an oath to the Constitution, yet still wants to limit rights of the honest and law-abiding citizen who by definition aren't going to cause them problems in law enforcement. Can you explain that?
So
you know what I'm talking about?
I do. So three quick things I'll say on that.
Okay.
The first one is from my experience and law enforcement officers that I've spoken with, mm-hmm. overwhelmingly rank and file law enforcement officers support expanded firearms rights. And it's not even close. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. That's good. And those are the folks that I'm talking about. Yeah. But,
right. Most.
Yeah.
Most of your opposition comes from leadership within law enforcement. And typically that happens when you have leaders who are elected or appointed in Democrat-run cities, because in order to be elected or nominated or nominated by an executive in those large cities, you have to support the liberal side of thinking, which advocates for more gun control. So the right. way they get that elected is by being that. And then the third thing is, I think that there is a small percentage, and I know there is because I've talked to them before, of law enforcement officers who do believe that they are the only ones, that there's something special and magical and mythical about them, and they should be the only ones who are allowed to possess firearms. And yeah. and no one else could possibly have the maturity or the training to be able to do this. Typically, the officers who I hear saying that are officers who go to the range once a year to qualify and have a hard time doing that, but somehow they believe themselves to be mythically empowered to be the only ones who can protect themselves with firearms.
Yeah, and like I say, it is a very small percentage we're talking about, but it's interesting that some of those folks do end up in leadership. You know, those are the people that are causing the kind of grief, and the whole Democrat City thing is, you know, and they're the ones with the highest crime rates too. So they're advocating something, you know, to disarm the law-abiding in the highest crime areas of the liberal cities run by Democrats, you know, by defying the Constitution. It's a really interesting intellectual twisting of what's going on. But yeah, I've met a couple of, and it's a very small percentage of my limited experience, you know, that they believe that they're the ones, you know, and it's fascinating. Sometimes I've gone to ranges. The best, you know, of law enforcement when it comes to firearms are the ones who compete. And I've met a lot of law enforcement and veterans who compete in firearms competitions. Chappie will attest to this. They're, you know, the gun is something that they study and practice with and learn about and get the skills in and spend a lot of time working on, you know, the when to, when not to, you know, the go, right. no-go decisions kind of thing. And that's the conscientious use of a firearm. It's such a mental thing, too. We haven't really talked about this much, but there's so much mental preparation. I mean, a gun is a physical object. It works. They're physical. They're properties of physics that are at work here. You know, you strike a primer, it creates an ignition, it ignites a gas, ignites a powder, powder creates the gas expands rapidly enough to move a certain green, hunk of lead with a copper jacket down through a barrel, which twists, sends it out. That's all physics. That's easily understood. But the mental part, the psychological part, the pulling of the trigger, and the aiming of the gun, the when to and when not to, that's all mental. That's something you have to practice and exercise and work on everybody as much or more than the physical skill. And I think sometimes that's one of the parts that's lacking.
Yeah, no, I agree. So one more quick thing from Alabama, and then I'm actually going to circle back to your statement about law enforcement officers, because there's actually another story I think that ties in very closely to that.
Interesting.
Back to Alabama for just a minute, just because it ties in really well with Shirley's segment. It's interesting to note that Moms Demand Action, as usual, were in Alabama fighting against constitutional carry. And John Petrolino, who is a great Second Amendment advocate and writer, wrote about that and some of the fallacies of the arguments that they were making, and then gave a great shout out to the DC Project. And he said that, the Moms Demand Action are not the only moms, and they're definitely not the moms that you should be listening to. You should be listening to the moms wearing their teal shirts who are part of the DC Project. Great shout out to DC Project, and also Shirley has helped me understand that teal is a color. So like most men, I think that there are probably only about 15 colors in the world. there's the
You've
primary
never
colors.
In the bathroom teal, I can tell.
There's primary colors, there's secondary colors, there's, black, white, and gray and brown. And then because I was in the military, there's coyote. And because I was in the military 1,000 years ago, there's olive drab.
That's
like the extent of colors that there are. But Shirley taught me that teal is a color. So now I understand and I even recognize when I see teal because of the DC Project t-shirt. So hats off to Shirley for that as well.
Oh, she's still on the line. Are you back now, Shirley?
Exciting.
Go ahead.
And I want to thank you for bringing it up. That was a great article and a great shout out to DC Project. He did an awesome job. Because that's one of the big things, MDA, Moms Demand Action, their facts aren't always factual. Let's put it that way. It's one of those, whatever their agenda is, they're going to say what they need to say. But thank you. And I'm so excited I taught you all about teal.
And, DC Project does an amazing job of being that counterbalance to MDA. So, they do, in addition to what they do up in D.C., they do huge work in countering the narrative that MDA is trying to put out. But anyway,
Shirley,
go ahead. Greg.
Why a quick thing for Shirley to get you back. Do you have any reporters in the DC Project? Any journalists? I'll tell you why I'm asking in a second.
We have, let's see. I'm sure we do. I'm sure we do.
Okay.
I mean, I
so
don't
here's
know
what
all
I do.
The delegates or the state directors. But I'm sure there's I guess.
So here's what I do. My action radio hint for the day is that you go to a Moms Demand Action press conference rally and ask a question if you can. You can come up with your own questions, but the question I would ask is, how does denying honest law-abiding citizens their constitutional rights, I got to work on my question. Basically, I'm saying, how is it that you think that denying constitutional rights to law-abiding citizens, which you can't do by law anyway, is somehow going to solve the problems that you see with criminals? Someone needs to ask these people in a press conference when they're speaking, some questions. You guys would be perfect to do it.
Yeah, I think a lot of times they are just a visual as well. And anytime that I've heard stories of when they're at the capitals, different capitals, and there's Teal for 2A, there's DC Project, they get vulgar and violent, and they're not always nice people.
Video it.
They're not the
video it.
People. They,
yeah, put it on video. Okay. Put it on video.
Well, yeah, I mean, I never was there. I just hear stories about that in different states.
You know, if they're, you know, when they see our stuff, our colors, they aren't very happy with that. I can understand why, because, you know, we are growing. We are telling the truth. There are facts behind what we state. So, yeah, it's an ongoing thing.
And they're actually, they're violating the Constitution. They're trying to fight the Constitution. You're trying to support us. You're on the right side of this. But this is interesting. This is almost like a political catfight. This is hysterical. I'm really curious to see how it works out. But I would upset them. I would ask some nasty questions that they do, or questions they think are nasty that they don't want to answer. I would videotape it. It's like, both of you, did you see the thing with Carrie, what's her name, in Arizona, talking to a reporter from ABC? Saying that you're all corrupt, you're not reporting the story, you reported 3 years of false Trump, you know, Russia collusion, which wasn't true, you're not reporting anything about the fraud in this, in the election of 2020, what the hell's your problem? You know, so they're challenging it. I would challenge moms for, you should, first of all, you need a nasty name for them too, because we talk about the power of words. Jim, you can help me out here too. What should we call these, you know, moms for victim disarmament? We need to label them something.
Yeah,
a creative name?
What would you call them, Jimmy?
Tommy mommies. I've heard them called
Tommy mommies? That's good.
I prefer the demanding mommies because I think they're all Karens and they're looking to speak to the manager.
Yeah, Karens for victim disarmament. Let's combine them all. We can have some fun with this. I got Derek on the line too, so I wanted to, but Jim, we kind of shortchanged, so and hopefully Derek can stay a couple minutes past the 8 o'clock hour. But do you have anything further, Jim?
So let me do one that'll take about 1 minute,
okay.
Just because it circles back to your discussion about some police officers and making ridiculous arguments.
Okay.
So right now, Arizona is considering a law to allow campus carry in the state of Arizona. And a retired police detective decided to write an op-ed piece on why this was a terrible idea. And in his op-ed, he said that it's a terrible idea because they ignore what actually happens in a shooting and that bullets can go everywhere. And the example he gave is a Mesa-involved shooting that he investigated in the 1980s, where two officers fired at a stationary target who was 5'6" and weighed more than 200 pounds. He'd thrown a knife in the general direction of an officer 20 feet away. The other officer was in the opposite direction, about 25 feet away. And the two officers fired 17 rounds. Of the 17 rounds, one hit the subject. The rest of them ranged vertically from 1 inch off the ground to 6 feet, 1 inch high, and horizontally over 12 feet left and right. And he said he can only imagine where those 16 rounds would have gone if that shooting happened on a college campus. Now, interestingly...
Or a police station. I mean, or a cruise ship. I mean, you can put this anywhere.
So,
but it wouldn't
so
have happened
this,
because
this
the
guy
wouldn't
is
fire.
Arguing, right? This guy is arguing that only police should be carrying firearms on campus,
right.
And then giving an example of police being unable to hit a target and having bullets go all over the place. He made a great argument that police shouldn't be armed. If that was what his argument should have been. But
well,
he wants other people not to have arms because police can't hit a target.
That is fascinating. Yeah, do you think these people even know their logic and how stupid they sound when they use these ridiculous examples? I mean, it makes sense in their head, which is kind of crazy. But I thought you were going to say the police officers shot each other. When you said they were police officers in an opposite direction. Did they almost shoot each other? This is what it sounds like.
Oh, I have no... information on that. I would imagine they weren't completely in the opposite direction. They were probably 90 degrees off from each other because police officers are usually pretty good, especially if they're out as partners. They're pretty good about not putting themselves in line with each other. So I imagine they were probably offset about 90 degrees from each other.
Yeah. What this really proves is the need for more training in stressful situations, realistic training, realistic stress. That's what that really does. Why don't you give your contacts up just in case you have to leave anytime soon, and then I want to get on to Derek, and we'll talk money.
Sure, you can reach us at floridacarry.org on the internet or email me directly at jim@floridacarry.org. And as always, Greg, it's great talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. I'll tell you, I knew it was a good idea putting you and Shirley together because you guys are great together as well. So we're going to keep this and keep rolling along. And now we're getting on Derek Park with Money.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
Hey, Derek, what a boring day in the market. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, my goodness. The beatings continue until morale improves.
We knew this was going to happen. I mean, we should tell your report, the financial I told you so report, because we all knew this was coming. This is not a surprise.
I didn't expect it to be this bad. I expected a little bit of a touch up. I still don't think it's bad. Unless you're directly in the NASDAQ. If you're directly in the NASDAQ, you're probably looking at about 18% pullback. Right. And a lot of people are, because the NASDAQ for the past 5 years has been pretty dang awesome. I don't want to say lesson learned. I mean, the NASDAQ will recover just like everything else does. Facebook will recover just like everything else does. I don't think it's the end of the world. Just stinks to see them returns.
low market is a buying opportunity. You've got to think overall. The market goes up. It goes up a little bit. It goes down. It goes up. It goes down. But overall, I guess it's pretty much always gone up. If I remember, in fact, I did an article on the when the Dow broke 19,000. So this is several years ago. And I went back to the original Mr. Dow and Mr. Jones and reported how this whole thing came about. It was fascinating, actually. I'm going to redo that. We've got a new article section at writeyourlaws.com, and our webmaster is able to we're going to do a Greg's blog. The articles that were lost at the intellectual conservative, we're going to recover and put them in there. So that's going to be interesting. All right, let's get the numbers, and then let's talk about inflation, the markets, what the real news, not, and like I said, to put some perspective to something that we've been talking about with people. If they've been listening to our report here, they've known about this possibility for a long time and should have been prepared for it. So what are the numbers saying? Then we'll get on to the discussion.
All right, well, let me read the report, and we'll get to the data.
Okay.
Stocks closed, or this is Derek Park of Ever Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. Stocks closed lower today, led by the tech sector after Facebook missed earnings and user growth expectations. The NASDAQ was down more than 3%, while the Dow outperformed with less than 1.5%. Technology stocks have been under pressure this year. The value has outperformed growth as investors price in expected rate hikes. Treasury yields inched higher but remain range bound. Bitcoin, which many have seen investors risk gauge, has gone lower overnight and continued its slide. Natural gas has continued to see extreme volatility, rising 16% ahead of winter storms and falling by more than 10% today. European and Asian stocks were also lower on the international front, following by a drop in the U.S. markets. U.S. equities closed lower today, with the Dow down 519 points, or 1.46%, to 35,110. The NASDAQ closed down 539 points, or 3.74%, to 13,879. And the S&P 500 closed down 112 points, or 2.4%, to 44,77. In the bond market, 10-year Treasury yields are trading at 1.83%, higher by 0.06. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up $1.86, or $2.11, to $90.12 a barrel. And the spot price of gold was down $4, or 0.24, to $1,806. This is Derek Park of Edward Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Well, before we get to what I was thinking of, that oil price just jumped right out at me. $90 a barrel? How's that going to translate to the pumps? That's a big jump.
Yeah. So last time we talked, it was roughly, 82. So, we've definitely seen a 10% increase, in the price, and I haven't seen any reports as to why, So I don't have anything specific right now, but, you know, I mean, everybody said in the near future, we're expecting $100 a barrel. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be expecting to see that.
You know, it's interesting. I found an article on the fact that, in fact, I think I said it to you. I don't have it right in front of me now, but Ukraine, the pipeline, we're buying, you know, the real Russian collusion. The earlier Russian collusion was Hillary giving away our uranium. Now the new Russian collusion is Brandon, you know, buying Russian oil that we didn't need in the Trump administration because we were energy independent. This is why I don't think there's going to be a Ukraine war, because they've already made their deal. I mean, they spent 3 hours on the phone with each other, you know, Brandon getting instructions. And he's got a record. I mean, his track record is surrender. That's what he does. And so his decisions are terrible. You look at Afghanistan, you know, I'm thinking the 3,000 troops that are going to Ukraine, it's all false. They've already made their deal. They've already talked about their business arrangement. The oil is going to go through from Russia to Germany. I don't know if it goes through Ukraine or near Ukraine, but, you know, the fact that we're now dependent on Russian oil pretty much prevents any war, because Putin now has blackmail and extortion, you know, leverage over Brandon, which was stupid to begin with. That's the beauty of being independent. And the fact that oil is $90 right. a barrel in anticipation of a potential Ukraine war that I don't think is going to take place, because Russia doesn't have to declare on Ukraine. They walk in. There's no
right.
geographic obstruction.
Right.
It's a wide open plain. The first thing they have is the Dnieper. How do you pronounce that river that runs through Ukraine? Dnieper? The big river. The big river that divides
don't
Ukraine
know.
In half. I looked at a map the other
yeah.
day. You know. Anyway, but the thing is, the eastern half of that, the half that touches Russia, most of the people there are Russian, or Russian ancestry, or Russian ethnic. You know, so half Ukraine's ethnic Russian anyway. Kiev, which we now call Kyiv, is on the other side of the Dnieper, you know, river, and those folks are ethnic Ukrainians. And so Russia, if they wanted to. If they want a buffer zone, they just take the western half of Ukraine that touches the eastern half of the eastern part of Russia. They walk in. There's a war. Right? What are these, 3,000 troops? They got 100,000 troops.
Right.
You know, this is and why aren't those troops? Here's my big question. Why aren't those troops on our southern border? If we got the troops to send to Ukraine, why don't we have the troops to send to the southern border where they really need it?
Well.
You don't have to answer that. You're a financial, you know, person. I don't want to get you in trouble. But when you think about it,
sure.
you know, if you want to take off your hat and speak as a military veteran, what the hell is this all about?
Is Ukraine? I mean, I think we've talked about it a little bit already. You know, I mean, the only problem with the Ukraine is, you know, I mean, as for foreign interests, I mean, the only thing that they have is that pipeline.
Right.
You know, so
is it through Ukraine or does it go through Ukraine?
It is.
Okay.
It is. Yeah. You know, so, you know, I mean, that was interesting listening to Jim last time about the port there. I wasn't aware of that. So that was very enlightening. But I mean, if you look at it from military or political interest, I mean, the country, I don't want to say it doesn't have much, but it doesn't have much. You know, so, you know, really, you know, for a political thing, I just don't believe if America gets involved, it's not going to be as any kind of full scale thing. In my personal opinion, it would be some type of NATO assistance kind of thing.
Assisting who? The government? Ukraine doesn't want a war. You know, Russia doesn't need a war.
We can't afford a war.
Say that again, sorry?
I said if it got to that point. I mean, you never know. I mean, if something pops off, you know, I mean, international incidents have started on very minimal things. You know,
oh, that's true. Oh, yeah, there's always the that factor. And I think a lot of the market rise in oil has to do with what people are worried about with Ukraine. This is why I brought it up. But I think that the vested interest of the United States, of the Brandon insurrection that want to keep the insurrection going, if the price of oil gets too high, they're going to be in serious trouble. And if they're blamed for a nonsense war in Ukraine, like I said, the Ukrainian government doesn't want it. You know, we can't afford it, and the Russians don't need it. They can just walk in. So there's no – NATO doesn't even want Ukraine as a member. So there's – nobody wants this except Brandon's propaganda machine. To make him look tough. That's why he killed that terrorist.
Whoever that is.
Well, Brandon just killed a terrorist somewhere.
Over in Syria.
Yeah, he's having Trump envy. But well, he is. But is Ukraine? Is that affecting the oil market now, or is it affecting the economy now? I know Brandon's affecting the Ukrainian economy. Because their market took a dump when, you know, they started talking about, you know, war and all this other kind of stuff. But is the oil market being affected by Ukraine right now, do you think?
I would have to dig, and like I said, I'm kind of unprepared for the oil stuff today.
Well, that's fine.
You know, so
can't
do
everything.
Definitely.
Yeah.
No. You know, I mean, I just haven't seen anything on the oil with the volatility we've had in the market. I mean, obviously, the focus has kind of been elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that then. And we can I'll check out my oil article at another point. But obviously, the price is going up. And so that's going to translate. Is there any kind of formula you can use? In other words, a $10 rise in the price of oil represents a 50 cent, a dollar, a $2 rise in the price of gasoline. Does it correlate?
You know, sometimes yes and sometimes no.
Okay, so that's not going to work then.
Where we're at now, I mean, obviously the $5 increase we've seen in oil, you could probably look at least 50 cents, I would say, at the pump.
Okay, which is huge. You know, it's,
yeah.
the more this gets going, you got a 20-gallon tank. If you got to pick up with 20-gallon tank, 50 cents, you know, a gallon, you know, that's an extra 10 bucks. And that's just that price rise. That doesn't count the ones that have already gone from last year. Well, let's talk inflation and the Fed. And I guess the news propaganda is saying, well, the Fed's or the Democrats are saying, well, the Fed's responsible for inflation, stopping inflation, curing inflation, causing whatever it is. They're trying to relate this all to the Fed. They're not talking about their spending. They're not talking about their printing of money. They're not talking about their horrible economic policies and the fact that we crossed $30 trillion in national debt. None of that comes up. They're all blaming the Fed. Which is crazy, even though the Fed has a part of it.
Yeah,
it's not the whole story.
I think they should be responsible for a little bit of that. The bottom line, I think we've talked about it multiple times. If you're just going to continue to print money or fabricate money, with no way to pay for it or no way to I don't want to say no way to pay for it. They have a way to pay for it. It's just not a proven way. And you've got a lot of economists that disagree with, you know, what's happening. They say it's a recipe for disaster for our fiat currency, right? And that's where you know, the Bitcoin and the gold people kind of come in and say, ha-ha, I told you so. I don't think it's necessarily bad because I have faith that the system will work because that's what our society is based on. I don't necessarily trust our government to always do the right thing. Everything we said they do is lagging indicators, but, you know, I mean, ideally when you print that kind of money, and you do your buyback program, one, they did it too long. We've discussed this as well. You know, I mean, like, they did too many handouts. They kept the economy closed too long. So, of course, this is the recipe for the disaster that you caused. Where are we at now? How do we fix it? Well, the Fed's on the way to trying to fix that. So this is where things get a little shaky. You know, they've already said that we're going to raise the rates in March, right? It's going to be the first rate hike. Well, as soon as the inflation report comes out, this is kind of going to be the, I don't want to say the coffin nail, or it could very well be the deciding factor. Well, if we have a report that says inflation has kind of gone sideways, that's a good indicator. That's actually good news.
What do you mean by sideways?
As in, like, it's not climbing anymore. We're not going to go to 8% from 7%, right?
Okay.
We have another report that says we're at, 7.1. It's only climbed a little bit, or, you know, we're 6.9. That's actually kind of saying that it's hit an apex, right?
Okay.
When it's hit the top, when the Fed starts raising the rate, hypothetically, in 6 months after a couple rate hikes, we should kind of see inflation kind of tailoring off, right? That would be their goal. That's what we're hoping for, right? The next thing is okay, even if it does go sideways, they do raise the rates, and then the next report we got, inflation hits 8 or 9%. Okay, well, that's probably not going to be good on the markets because everybody's going to go into a panic. Inflation, that's basically saying inflation is going to spiral out of control. Everybody's going to go, I don't want to say that it's going to spiral out of control, but that's going to be everybody's thought. You've got two camps that are kind of preaching both, you know, two camps are saying, hey, inflation could kind of go sideways and then start to tailor off. Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan basically said, hey, if the Fed continues to raise the rate, we should kind of see this thing subside. You got the CEO of BlackRock says kind of very similar things. Well, then you've got the Bank of America, you know, analyst. I can't remember who their lead analyst is. It's like, oh man, we're screwed.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, so
I mean, you got different people saying different things, and you know, okay. What I've learned in this business is everybody's not real good at predicting what's going to happen. You know what I mean? We try to do that to try to ease everybody's calm. You know, I mean, ideally, you know, if we build confidence in one direction or other, more than likely it's going to go the other direction. You know, so.
Well, perception runs the market too. Perception runs the market. If they say there's no inflation, everything's great, it's transitory, keep investing, people are going to spend money. They're going to invest in the market and it's going to go up. If they go doom and gloom, you know, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Everybody sells their stuff and then it becomes real doom and gloom. So that's the problem with perceptions, you know, and I wish they, I don't ask for predictions. I mean, I sort of look at the trends. So we talk about trends, you know, where's it going? Is this trend likely to continue? Is it not likely to continue? But yeah, the more you get speculative, the more you start predicting, the more that becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy, and that's a problem too.
Sure. And you know, I mean, there's the three things that control the market. You know, average current economy, consumer or investor sentiment, and consumer confidence. You know, I mean, those three things. Are really the biggest things that will drive the market. You know what I mean? And really, you've got about two others that'll kind of squeeze in there every once in a while. You know what I mean? Current politics, you know, what's going on, like what decisions are our lawmakers going to make that have an impact on that? And then you've got geopolitical concerns. Those will kind of squeeze in there. So, yeah, I mean, you've definitely got other things, but those three things right there will drive the market quicker than anything else, with the number one being investor sentiment. Somebody thinks, you know, or they get the report that it's going to do good, it's going to do good. You know what I mean? Because everybody's going to start buying it. You know, I mean, I would tell you, you know, on some news that came out, I mean, purchases on Facebook yesterday were through the freaking roof. you know, so basically,
buying
a lot of people, took the opportunity when Facebook got their throat cut, you know, so purchases on their stock were just astronomical yesterday. They were actually outweighing the sells. You know, so there's a lot of investors that weren't running away from that. I mean, so obviously Facebook will turn around. I mean, when, you know, I mean, who knows? It's going to take them reporting another good quarter. You know, we're going to have to get past this inflation thing. So it might be 6-8 months, but, you know, it's they'll be back. I mean, unless the government gets in there and starts breaking them up like they said they might do. So that might cause some problems.
Now I've got a simple solution. It's my rewrite of Section 230. That's the easiest way out of this. But the antitrust folks and the regulatory folks, you know, that's the wrong way to go about this. I'll tell you what's going to be interesting, though. You know, this is me speaking personally as not a financial, you know, expert or advisor. But if I had money to play with Facebook and, you know, I'd sell my Facebook the day or like a week before Trump Social comes out or Truth Social. And then I buy back again. That's just me, you know, because I think a lot of conservatives, this is, you know, are going to move over. I'm going to move over to it. I need to move over to Truth Social because I'm completely censored on Facebook. You know, one of the problems with the show, the reason we haven't had the growth that we should have had, you know, based on a really good start 3 years ago, is that 2 years ago I came out and said that COVID's curable. There is no pandemic and the vaccines are a waste of time because the disease is already here. So get immune to it. And it only affects, you know, 0.01 small percentage of people anyway. So, you know, but ever since I came out with the truth on COVID, you know, I was Seth Wilkin 2 years ahead of him, which we usually tend to do, which is why I've declared for Trump, you know, has won Pennsylvania, by the way, the theme of the show today. But yeah, I mean, there's the price to be paid for being truthful, because the people that don't want you to be truthful say that you're lying when they're lying. They're lying about your truth, and they're putting their lies as truth, and it's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here we are. Truth is not true, and if you say the truth, you get banned. And you know, I mean, it's just an interesting time that we live in.
Okay. Well, let me ask you two totally unrelated financial questions. I think Chappie called in and then he left. I don't know if he was listening off the air right now. Call back in, unless I hit the wrong button by accident, which happens sometimes. I try and put everybody's name, you know, on your phone call so I keep track of who's here. The two things I was thinking of is one, as a Second Amendment advocate, and I asked Shirley and Jim the same question, I believe this is a great time to, while the Canadian truckers are in Ottawa and while the Australian truckers are in Canberra, and maybe other countries, Norway has a truck rally, there's a couple of other countries that are doing it. I think Holland has one too. This is a great time while you're there getting rid of vaccine and mask and other lockdown mandates, this is a great time to try and get your gun rights back. I don't know if people want to sideline that, because the first argument that the left is going to say is, what, you want those truckers getting a bunch of guns? Is that what you're talking about? That's an armed insurrection. I know that's going to happen. But I'm still saying this still is a good time, even despite that propaganda that's obviously going to come. This, I still think, is a good time for truckers to calmly advocate, while we're taking away these mandates, let's get our rights back here. You think it's a good idea, or you think it would be better timed another time?
Yeah, I mean, sure, it breaks well.
Okay.
I know, Canada has their own weird rules on stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, would it be a good opportunity? Sure. I mean, do I think that it's far-fetched? Even more sure. Yeah.
Well, you know me, I'm going to, when I'm trying to hold the Canadian truckers and the Australian truckers, I got contacts. I'm trying to get a good contact in Canada. I've got someone in Australia who's working on it right now, but it's actually at the rally, so it's a little hard to get to this through. But this is the perfect opportunity for citizen legislation. You know, they're protesting. They've got demands. They want to get rid of the mandates. You know, but they're not taking the next step, which is what I'm trying to convince people to try at least and see what happens, because we don't know what's going to happen. You never know with legislation, but at least try writing the bills, writing the laws that you consent to be governed by as people, as free people, to say, look, these mandates, we didn't, we vote for people for office, but, when it comes to the actual policies that they're doing, giving themselves this kind of power, no. We take that power away. And I think the best way to do that is to replace the authority the government uses to create the mandates in the first place, take that authority away, and then have that become an election issue and see what happens. But that's my goal. So we shall see.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get back to economics. Natural gas. You mentioned that earlier. The price of natural gas is up. California, because they're so environmentally, concerned and woke, most of their non uranium power plants are natural gas powered. So they don't have oil, they don't have coal, because they don't like that, because that makes nasty smoke and burns things. But most of them are nice, clean natural gas. So the price of gas goes up. That's going to affect the price of power in California.
Oh, sure. It's going to affect the price of power everywhere. So
how big is natural gas then?
What's that?
How many, I don't know if you know the percentage of plants, but how substantial is natural gas as a fuel for power plants? I mean, I'm not sure. I'm curious.
I know I haven't seen an exact statistic on that, but I have seen a statistic that said something like 2/3 of the U.S., has some type of thing that runs off of natural gas. So it's actually like a high number, like more than half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, I would tell you, you start getting up north, you head towards, you head towards top of Alabama, you get up into Tennessee, natural gas starts becoming a thing at that point.
Hmm. Interesting. You know what else they did too? I'm going to try and sneak in a quick text to Chappie while we're at it, because, like I say, I think he did call in. Maybe he is having a little difficulty calling in at this point. Maybe something came up. That happens all the time, by the way. That's what makes it really interesting doing the radio. The other thing I was going to mention about that, the fact that the electric cars, California, I don't know if we've talked about this or not, told their citizens to not charge their electric cars. This is, I think, during the heat of the summer. If they have a natural gas shortage, that cuts into the power plant, so the price goes up, that's going to raise the price of those electric cars too. So that they might even be less competitive or less desirable than gasoline cars. Have people thought of that at all? The economics of electric cars. What's going on? Do you have any insight
I'm sure that there's... I'm sure that there's some statistics or something behind it to support it. I mean, obviously, if power's costing more, it's going to cost more to fuel your car. If you want to keep it in perspective, is still, poised to probably, I don't want to say go up, but if you're talking about gas is going up, Electric is going up. You know, natural gas is going up. I mean, there's going to be some trickle-down effect from that. And, I mean, maybe we're just kind of seeing it now, but, ideally there's going to be some effects.
Interesting. Okay, that's all I have. I think I pretty much, we've covered the things that I've got going here. So, yeah. All right. And the thing is, we have talked about this before. I think we should probably make the point, because normally we go steamrolling through this stuff. We have talked about the national debt. We have talked about inflation. We've talked about all these things. And the reason we have to keep talking about it is because the problems are still there. So here's a general question. We know what the problems are. They keep causing the same problems all the time. How do we get through to these idiots? Or do we need new idiots to replace the old idiots that are in charge of the controls of the economy and do something better? What do you think? Or should we save that for another time? You still there?
I'm going to go with option B there. You replace the old idiots with new idiots. Okay. That may or may not end up being counterproductive, but ideally, people get tired of the same old, no change, hey, this is what we were told, we were sold a bag of goods kind of thing. So if you don't have fresh leadership that's willing to come in and make some kind of a big change or a big move, you're going to have the same stuff over and over and over again. So people will get tired of that, so it takes, takes fresh leaders to maybe possibly incite some change.
Let's see what happens with that. Well, like I said before, it's the last point here, and then I'm going to play some Santa Rosa Volunteer stuff, and we'll see if I can get a hold of Chappie and another person I was hoping will join us at this, in this next hour too, is that I'm declaring, Action Radio is declaring that Trump won Pennsylvania based on the lower court decision that the mail-in ballots of Pennsylvania are invalid, which puts Trump 20 electoral votes ahead, Brandon 20 electoral votes behind. And so Brandon went from, I think, 305. He's now down to, if this goes through, as I think it's going to, gets to 285. Trump gets a boost from 240-something. He gets 20 more electoral votes. How would that affect the market now that I think about it? If Trump starts winning these states, he did win the states, but if Trump gets either certified, Brandon gets disqualified, if as this ruling, the mail-in ballots are unconstitutional and they're forced to change their electoral count and Trump actually gets more than 270. What's the market going to do?
I would say the market won't do anything because, in my personal opinion, while that stuff, sounds good to a lot of people, I think it'll go nowhere.
Okay.
I think if people had concerns or thought that something was going to happen with that, I think it's all for naught. I think the efforts will fall on deaf ears. I think it won't go anywhere, and it's just going to have to roll on for the next 3 years and hope things change in the next one. Just personal opinion. I just don't think it'll go anywhere.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think it does. I'm always the eternal optimist. That's my curse. The way I look at this, I'm thinking to myself, okay, so if Trump takes, if Trump is gets the delegates that they disqualify Brandon, considering that Trump had a much better economy, in terms of oil, manufacturing, energy, foreign trade, tariffs on the bad guys, like China, things like that. Our economy was great under Trump. I would think that would be an encouraging thing for the market. They would actually encourage, more states to correct their electors and get Trump back in as quickly as possible to reverse this nonsense. That's how I would look at it in my ideal world.
Right, right. No, I would look at it the same way. And, people should understand that a great market is not necessarily the result of a great economy, but it's typically a byproduct. You should never judge the performance of the market with the economy. Those two things, while they can go hand in hand, they don't necessarily correlate.
That's really interesting. And, yeah, I never thought about that.
Huh. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's you have to understand that the market is a byproduct. You know, I mean, you got to keep that. Obviously, keep in mind, you know, companies, if they're reporting negatives or reporting low sales, you know, the market's not going to do good. So you have to understand that it's a byproduct or a result or a lagging indicator of whatever's going on in the economy. You know what I mean? So take inflation, for example. You know, inflation was kind of heating up in the background, you know, for the past 6 months, 8 months, a year. You know what I mean? We can do the math on it. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, now the economy is paying the price for that. You know, so or the market's paying the price for that is what I meant. Reports come out, inflation continues to grow. Market says, nope, we're not investing extra money right now. You know, so definitely, you know, people should keep that in mind.
Which raises the question, can you have a great market if there's a disconnect? Can you have a great market without a great economy? I would say no.
You can't, you know what I mean? But the economy can be going sideways and the market still prevail. You know what I mean? So would you consider if the economy is going sideways a great economy? A lot of people wouldn't, you know. But the market, as long as there's not anything bad, the market will continue to do what the market does as long as anybody doesn't get bad news.
Well, a sideways market economy is a stable economy. So that to me is not a detriment.
It is, but, you know, they want growth, though. You got to keep that in mind. You know,
yeah.
I mean, if there's growth that's not happening, you know, then you know, or at least the prospects of growth or things are well, people aren't going to want to invest. They're not going to put their money into things that they don't feel are going to grow.
That makes sense. We should talk about that
sometime
too, about what makes it, you know, the actual factors of growth and how much can an economy grow, especially with a $30 trillion national debt. All right. Let's get your contact information once more. I got to play some things and I got to, do my sponsors here. And then let's talk next week. Anything else that you want to add? Any other stories we should be covering, looking at?
I mean, we cover quite a bit. There's a lot
always,
going on
we
right
do.
Now. So
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week then.
Nope. All right. Well, hey, thanks for having me. This is Derek Park with Edward Jones. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Cool. Thank you, sir. And Trump won
yep,
Pennsylvania.
Take care.
All right. Bye, Derek.
Bye-bye.
This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever.
because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half-liter water bottle or 16-ounce glass to create a full-power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
So after a bunch of flying texts back and forth, it's time to get going here. We've got Donnie Chapman with gun competitions and tech and anything else that's on his mind. What's going on, sir? Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Sorry about coming in late, getting on a real spotty location here. We're heading out to the range to get ready for our first USPSA match tomorrow. Hell, that's Escambia River Gun Club. So hopefully this weather will hold out for us.
Yeah. I got Jonathan on the line. Well, I had Jonathan on the line. I guess, everybody's coming and going. Maybe we're having some phone problems or things today because I know you had a little difficulty calling in. So I'm going to sort of intersperse, and I may have another guest coming in too. So this entire show has been crazy with folks calling in. Even the regular schedule has been kind of crazy. Yeah. So let's see what's going on. So who's competing? What's happening this week?
So at Escambia River Gun Club, we're having our first USPSA match. It's being hosted by our new USPSA club. It's Escambia River Practical Shooters. Right now the match is full, but if anybody would still like to show up and shoot, just come on out to the range. The match starts tomorrow at 9. Sign-in starts at 8:30. So come out and we'll figure a way to get you on a squad and have you shoot. It's going to be really good. And then come March, we're going to have a huge raffle from all our sponsors. One of them, which is one of your sponsors, Strikeforce Energy Drink.
Yeah.
So they're going to help us out, have this raffle and help us buy more equipment. That's going to help our club expand and grow and make a great match for future matches. So we're looking really forward to it. Hopefully, like I said, it might be a little cold tomorrow, but as long as the rain holds off, we'll be shooting. So.
All right. Well, I might have to abbreviate your report a little bit here if you can hang around for a while. I've got Cheryl Todd on the line right now, and I haven't talked to her. We've been sort of going back and forth. She's got a crazy schedule. I've got a crazy schedule, but she has a gun show.
Actually,
and what's that?
Actually, that's fine. I got to get back to the kind of supervising the stuff. I just want to let everybody know, hey, we're shooting tomorrow. They'd like to come out. So.
Okay. Let's give a shameless plug for Chappie Tactical and Firearms and then get on to the gun competition.
That sounds great. Yep. Just I can be reached at Facebook/Chappie Tactical or Instagram @Chappie Tactical. If you got any questions or want some shooting advice, please email me at ChappieTactical@gmail.com. And like I said, tomorrow is our first USPSA match held at Escambia River Gun Club.
Love it. All right. Well, we'll talk later. Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
All right.
Cheryl, welcome to Action Radio. This is the first time I've talked. This is great. I'm so glad to have you on. I'm so glad you can make it.
Hello. Thank you for keeping trying to make our schedules work. And I apologize for the little bit of frog in my throat. It's 7:15 in the morning here. So.
Oh, my goodness. We'll give you a round of applause anyway. So there we go. So okay. Yeah, welcome. So I want to, listen, this Friday is like gun day here. So if you ever want to call in on a Friday, feel free. Cause we have usually the last 45 minutes or so are pretty open. And so it's a good time to sort of check on what's going on. I've got a couple of big themes today. One is a story that Jonathan Mosley broke yesterday, that Pennsylvania I'm declaring for Trump. So Action Radio is the first to declare that Trump won Pennsylvania based on the lower court ruling that the mail-in ballots are illegal. So I think that's going to be huge. And the other thing is the reason I wanted to talk to you is, and I'm getting various opinions from all our gun folks. We got Shirley Wattrell is on. She was on earlier. Jim Dykes from Florida Carry, Shirley Wattrell from DC Project, Chappie, who does the competitions and gun techs, and he's designing his own AR-15s. And now you, the same question I've been asking everybody, would this be a good time to talk to Canada and Australia, the truckers, in Canberra and Ottawa, about possibly advancing and getting their firearms, rights back at the same time as they're getting rid of the mandates over COVID? What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, every day is a good day to talk to people about, why they do care or don't care about personally being involved in supporting their individual rights to self-defense, the rights to keep and bear arms. I don't care what nation they're in. Every day is a good day, but especially now, especially where everybody is, I don't like to speak in absolutes. I shouldn't use the word everybody. I would say that by now, if you are still scoffing at the idea, oh, the government's really going to be a tyrant, though, the government's going to become tyrannical, don't be ridiculous, you big conspiracy theorist. If you are still in that mindset, well, God bless you, good luck in life. But I think most people have been rudely woken awake, and I think that that is the silver lining of the garbage nightmare that we have been through in the last 2 years, is that, you know, there's that, you know, the analogy of the frogs in the pot of water. And, you know, if you just turn the heat up slowly enough, they'll just lull off to sleep and be boiled to death and eaten, right?
Yeah.
But if you crank that heat up too fast, they're going to wake up and go, what's happening? It's hot in here. And they're going to jump out of the pot. And I think that that is what has happened for a lot of people. And clearly these truckers, when has this ever happened before?
Well, these are Canadians. Now, we have a new Canadian reporter, Laura Avalazzi. Did I pronounce that? Avalazzi. Anyway, I'll get my Italian accent right. Anyway, so she's from my hometown of Toronto. And so I'm Canadian by birth, U.S. by naturalization. And so we're trying to get, you know, contacts in Canada. We're doing direct reports of Canada. I've got a friend of mine now in Australia that I'm trying to get a report on the Skype line. It's like 11 o'clock at night when the show starts. It's 6 in the morning here. But I got someone I want you to meet. And this is just one of those wonderful little synchronicity, the planets are aligning, and someone you might want to have on your show, who is our legal reporter. He's a criminal defense attorney. He specializes in constitutional law, Second Amendment issues. He also is defending a couple of the folks at in the D.C. Gulag from January 6th. And he spent 6 hours 2 days ago in front of the January 6th Insurrection Committee covering up the actual overthrow of the government by the Brandon Deep State. And that's Jonathan Mosley. Mm-hmm. So, Jonathan, welcome to the program. I got Cheryl Todd on here, too.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. I don't want to step on her time, but happy to say it. And when we get around to the Pennsylvania thing, I wanted to be here.
Okay, well, good.
And,
let me tell you how much time Cheryl has, too.
I just want to say that I totally agree that it seems like since I've been involved in politics since the 80s, and things, it seems like I've said many times, conservatives tend to see a little bit of daylight and declare victory and then go home, and we quit way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have been, I'll say the collective we, as far as a conservative-minded person, spineless, our elected officials. They talk so tough when they're on the campaign trail. They get to Washington or they get to our state capitol here in Arizona, and then they're suddenly spineless, and all they can do is capitulate and try to play nice. They turn Canadian, right? They get too nice with
well,
the
not these days.
Side.
Canadians are getting a little
right?
feisty, but yeah. Well, there's a reason I call them the gelding old party. I mean, I took the GOP and made them the gelding old party, and that's what they are.
Yeah.
You know, they will. They can't stand winning. They can't stand actually being in charge. This is why I'm worried about them winning. You know, they're talking about these big victories that are going to happen in the House and Senate. Well, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about what they're going to do once they get this. Are they going to totally kowtow the Democrats again? But you've got to. I want to hear about your show real quick, and then I want to talk. Then we'll get to Jonathan. We're going to kind of bounce back and forth. Cheryl, how much time do you have? Because the show goes till the top of the hour.
Yeah, I can stay to the top of the hour.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, good. Then we can kind of do this over time. So let's hear about your show, first of all, and then I want to tell you what we do, and then I want to get to Jonathan about the fact that Action Radio is the first to declare Trump wins in Pennsylvania. Let's give that a quick little my little promo here.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
And it starts with being the first to break an ounce. We broke the story that chloroquine kills COVID, March 2nd, 2020. We beat everybody. We were way ahead on this, and we still are. So tell me about your show. I want to hear about it. What do you guys –
well,
gun show, what's it called? Yeah.
Thank you so much. We are – the words are Gun Freedom Radio, but that's not how it's pronounced. It's
okay.
Gun Freedom Radio. So – you know, just so you get the pronunciation right, I heard the top of your show yesterday where you were interviewing the lady with the Italian last name. So I know that you are you're careful with your pronunciation. So
have a lazy work on it. Well, I do accents too. Yes. Well, we want to talk Indian. Whatever wonderful time we talk about the gun rights in India. Maybe we from time.
Oh my gosh, cancel culture is coming for you if you're doing
accents. Oh, listen,
nobody
can
do anything anymore.
Maybe be Yoda. Maybe the Force is strong with us today.
That's
Hello,
probably
Jedi.
A safe one. That's a safe one. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So it's Gun Freedom Radio, and we are an interview-based show. So nobody cares, including me, what I'm thinking about things. I know what I think about things, right? I'm pretty verbal and vocal out there, and I speak all over the country and that sort of thing. So I want to use my show, as it looks like you are using your show, to find out what other people are thinking, you know, subject matter experts. And we don't do a lot on the guns themselves, the equipment. You know, we don't do reviews and that sort of thing. That's just not my personal bent. My co-host is my husband of 30, almost 7 years.
Oh, congratulations.
And he's, thank you. He is like an encyclopedia of the tools, the equipment. And he could talk about it all day, but I'm the one that writes the show notes. So guess what? We talk.
About Perfect marriage. I can see it now.
What? Right?
It's, hi, honey. Why'd you say that on the show today, dear? Okay, fine. Yes, dear. Yeah.
There's a lot of that. And then if somebody says, Dan, why'd you say that on – a friend would say, Dan, why'd you say that on the show? And he'd say, because Cheryl wrote it down in the script for me to say. So there's,
oh,
you know,
wow.
There's these things. But anyway, we talk about politics and issues and the fun side of shooting, and it's just been a really wonderful journey for us. It kind of started as really a marketing. We had a gun shop up until about a year ago. We had a retail gun shop called AZ Firearms, and it was the proverbial corner shop in any town USA. And, you know, we opened like 2 years before Obama was elected. And so when we first started, you know, we had always had a business of some sort. We've been in antiques. We're still in antiques. Right. We still have an auction house, Pot of Gold State Auctions. Baseball card store for a while. We had a mail shipping store. We had just a variety of things. Our first business was a slot machine store. We'd drive over to Nevada, 4 hours away, bring them slot machines back, fix them up, sell them here in Arizona. So our first 2 years of business, it was just any other retail shop, right? Then Obama starts spewing the most hateful and negative stuff about guns and those who own them, and God forbid, those who should sell these tools of death, right? And people that I'd known for years suddenly looked at my husband and I a little bit differently, like they just weren't quite sure what this whole gun thing was about. So we realized we needed to have an education piece to be able to, you know, we knew what we felt and why we were in the business and why we care about the Constitution. But then I realized when I would try to articulate it, I was having trouble really getting my point across. And so I thought, well, I'll just talk to people that's their key area of expertise, and I will learn from them. And as I learn from them, we'll have them talk into a microphone, and then my, you know, the broader audience, you know, you expand your sphere of influence. And so that's kind of how it started. We've been doing this for, I don't even know now, probably 7 years or so, and it's been a wonderful thing. And we keep a record on our website, gunfreedomradio.com, all of the guests we've ever had on. It's a huge and growing resource of subject matter experts, and we've evolved over the years. We were strictly radio. We were a 15-minute spot on radio, and then we moved to an AM station, and we were an hour. And then my husband was like, hey, this is going pretty well. Why don't we double the time and we'll be 2 hours? Now you're 3 hours, so you're laughing at me right now. But
well, only
like,
because, but I have 12 regular reporters. We don't just stick to the firearms issue, fun though it would be, and we spend most of Friday on it. But we cover so many different things, legal stuff, tax stuff. We have a cruise and travel report. We have, in fact, I found out something fascinating that both of you might be interested. There's a hospital ship that trails the cruise ships right now. We just heard about this from Alan in Belize, broke some news this morning, that there's this hospital ship. So if you get COVID on a cruise line, which of course you can't because everybody's fully vaccinated, right? But if you actually get COVID, when you can't get COVID, there's a hospital ship will take you off the ship. You stay on the hospital ship, that'll dock in port with you. And all these cruise lines are dropping, it's like the leper colony. So they're dropping all these folks off, you know, on this cruise ship, and then they're stuck there until they get back home again. So there's some fascinating stuff that breaks on this show all the time. So here's what I want to do. I wanted to get to Jonathan because I don't want to keep him longer because he's got to defend people in D.C. and some other stuff. So we're going to jump around. I want to get Jonathan's take on Trump winning Pennsylvania. Then I want yours on that, Cheryl. And then if Jonathan has time, too, the psychology of guns. I want to spend a few minutes on that, and then I'll tell you what we do here at Action Radio. Because what is fascinating to me is the entire psychology of defense, of the responsibility, of having the, you know, the symbol of your independence, you know. It's like, you know, the question, you know, why do you have a gun? Why do you need a gun? Well, my answer is, why do you need to know? You know, I mean, so that kind of stuff. We do a lot of psychological talk here. But let's get to Jonathan. About my declaration, you know, when they say, you know, Fox News came out for Brandon in Arizona. Well, screw that. We're coming out for Trump in Pennsylvania. And I'm going mostly what Jonathan said. I've got four articles on it I can quote. We'll probably do that Monday. But Jonathan, how are we doing? Where do we stand on that as far as declaring for Trump?
Well, Greg wanted to put out a press release today, so that kind of forced me to do a little bit more homework.
That's after the show. Yeah, I'll be saying, Cheryl, you're on the list, by the way, too, now. Cheryl, you'll get it as well. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, Jonathan.
No, I checked into the details. I better pull up. So on the 17th, there was a wait a minute. There was a decision by the Commonwealth Court of Pennsylvania. It was argued November 17th. Excuse me, I need to fix the press release.
Yeah, they just did it like just a couple of days ago. They came down with
the decision. This came out a couple of days ago that the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court has declared that Act 77 is unconstitutional in Pennsylvania. And, you know, there's something called – the reason it's called Act 77 is that during a session they amend – the law, so the amendment is Act 77, but they're amending the standing election laws. That's why it sounds so weird. And that Act 77 passed in March 27, 2020, obviously in the face of the pandemic, and we're all going to die.
Right during 15 days to slow the spread. You notice they did that during 15 days to slow the spread. It's not like that was planned or anything. I mean, it's not like they were ready to go with an act, you know, when COVID is just catching on. You know, it's not like this is totally coincidental. Right, Jonathan?
Well, because if it was 15, it would take longer than 15 days just to pass a new law and the thing. So,
exactly.
It would have been over before they could have gotten the thing passed. But anyway, so they vastly expanded mailing and voting. And I proposed in the press release your explanation of how, you know, the way you want to word it, mail-in voting is a breeding ground for fraud, and it's designed to be. And we emphasized, because they tried to say that Rudy Giuliani is a racist because we're because of the racial composition of where he was worried about fraud, and I point out it's the voters whose vote were stolen. The legitimately elected voters are the victims of people who steal mail-in votes out of people's mailboxes, maybe bribe a postman, or an election office official or whatever. So these are unsolicited mail-in ballots that are sent out without being asked for, which would be a check on legitimacy, and without any reason, what they call no excuse mail-in voting. And the court found that conflicts with Pennsylvania's constitution. That means that it can't be, that part of it cannot be appealed up to the federal court or the U.S. Supreme Court because it's a matter of the Pennsylvania constitution. What it means, which is what you're interested in, most of all, that is going to end up, I'm sure, before the U.S. Supreme Court. And remember that 20 states sued in the U.S. Supreme Court, and Supreme Court dodged that. Like everything else, they didn't decide it; they just ducked it, which is, I think a dereliction of duty. So anyway, what I looked up in Doug McClinko versus Commonwealth of Pennsylvania et al. They were consolidated two cases. Interestingly, they were argued last November, but just released. And what happened is that on November 3rd, Joe Biden received 1,409,341 legally valid votes under the pre-existing law. Donald Trump received 2,731,230 legally valid votes. That means that Trump received 65.96% of the legally valid votes for president in Pennsylvania on November 3rd, 2020, which we say, of course, like 15 days to spread, slow the spread. When we say November 3rd, it really means like, you know, months before and after, but loosely speaking, November 3rd. Joe Biden, however, received 1,995,691 mail-in votes. You're off the sound. I hope you can hear me.
No, you just came right back. Okay, that's good. I'm going to listen to the podcast. I'll get all these numbers down and put them in the press release.
Well, I sent you the press release.
Okay, good.
I sent them to you.
All right. I've been on the air, so I probably missed it. Yeah.
I hope you lost me. So I lost you there for a few seconds. You heard that Trump received 65.96% of the legally valid votes for president.
Yes, I heard that. Yep.
Now, that's when I say legally valid, I mean only with respect to this issue. There may have been other – we know there were other types of fraud. And remember, there are issues about whether the legal procedures were valid. That's one whole issue, you know, what laws they were following, right or wrong.
I got to hold you just for a second because I don't want to take up all Cheryl's time with and I can read this in the press release. In fact, I want to give Cheryl a chance to ask you any questions because this might be something that she wants to talk about on her show, which might be interesting.
Sure.
But if you fit the numbers and you send me the basic information, let me go with that. But overall, we're on pretty solid ground here declaring Trump the winner. That's really what I'm asking.
Absolutely.
Good.
I mean, the only thing is what does it mean? And nobody knows because it's never happened before. It's never been done before. But there's no question that – and that means that the Electoral College vote stands at 285 for Biden, excuse me for swearing, and to – I mean, I'm not – it stands at 252 for Trump. So if Arizona's 11 votes were switched or Wisconsin's votes plus some other state were switched, then Trump would have won the election.
Yeah. Speaking of Arizona. Cheryl, which just happens to be in Arizona. So how come you guys haven't, gone through and you did the audit and we're all waiting. We're all waiting for the disqualification. You know, Wendy Rogers certainly wants to do it. What's holding you guys up?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just sitting here shaking my head because who knows, really, honestly. And when our governor gets on, he was on Sean Hannity a while back, and he was on a panel of governors like Kristi Noem, you know, who did the best anybody has done with this pandemic, didn't shut the state down, that sort of thing. And it's like, how does Doug Ducey end up on the same panel as her because they're talking about freedom issues, right? And then Hannity goes, and how about this audit going on in Arizona? And Doug Ducey goes, well, this will be our fourth audit. It's like, no. When our own governor is either willfully lying or he is that uninformed, then he's got to be willfully uninformed. Then I believe he's still willfully lying. It's a communication issue, I think, mostly at its core as to why more hasn't been done by this time. It's like we're living through the Tower of Babel across this entire world, definitely across this nation, and certainly in our state, as it pertains to the election, you know, listening to Jonathan and everybody that has tried so hard to communicate about what is wrong, what happened, there's a messaging issue. Mm-hmm. We need those fine details. We cannot move forward if we don't know those fine details. But people glaze over. It's the same thing with gun rights. You know, the other side tells some tear-jerking, emotional, heartstring story, and off they run making a bunch of horrible laws or regulations that act like laws. Our side, we're going back to, you know, Lexington and Concord. We're going back to what was legal and what was even manufactured at the time. Like, we get so stuck down in the details mm-hmm. that we've got to do a better job of messaging, and that's definitely the case with what happened with the election. The other piece of it is, what is the procedure? There's so many people that they seem like they get it. They've looked at the numbers. They understand the numbers. They understand the process that brought them to these numbers. They go, yes, it was a valid audit. Thing is really rotten in Arizona and now Pennsylvania. But there's no procedure to fix it. And so I'm
well,
like,
it's like us here. You got to make the procedure. You got to make it.
Because, right. That's your ultimate answer. There's no procedure. Because it hasn't happened before? Well, we never had a COVID before, but guess what? They came up with some procedures pretty lickety-split.
Well, they had them long before COVID. That's a whole different do you have a question for Jonathan about the details about this at all? I'll give you that opportunity. Because he said, first of all, Jonathan, thank you very much. I appreciate this more than you know, and I'll get the press release out after the show. We'll talk about that then. But do you have any questions on that, Cheryl?
Well, I feel, Jonathan, that you did such a good job of explaining, but so I don't really have a question about the details that you've given or how you arrived at them. But do you, I mean, you are, the position you hold, you are doing it right. But do you have a thought on how we can use the information you have worked so hard to gain and message it more effectively so that it hits people in a place that they can listen long enough to get it? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it needs to be repeated and explained and, you know, over and over and widely. It is an education issue. I work here in D.C. in various things, and people believe that being an expert is just copying what the person next to them said. They don't actually go and learn anything. They just repeat what other people have said. And so there's an ignorance thing there. But I hope that, like, a press release putting, like, nobody seems to be saying what Greg Penglis wants to say is that the meaning of this is that Trump won Pennsylvania. So that's an attention-getting beginning. I totally agree with you that we need to do better messaging. The left, they have terrible policies and really evil policies, but they're very good at saying them. And I think we believe that if we just write, that's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, unfortunately. So we really mm-hmm. have to work on the messaging that you say, which we've taught, I think.
Yeah, Shel, I really hope you can come back more often. This has opened up just a whole new world for us here. I'm going to tell you what we do, you know, but I want to get Pianki on the line. He's one of our regular callers here and a citizen legislator. He's written a bill to separate the ballots of federal and state. And so Pianki, you've got Cheryl Todd, you've got Jonathan, you got me. This is a crazy Friday. I wish we had more time. We had a four-hour show today. Pianki?
Yeah, I heard Jonathan. I thought I had woke up back in time. But
well, you missed Alan this morning. You missed your chance to find out what they're serving, you know, for dinner in Belize. But that was earlier in the show. This has been a busy day.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things that's lacking is the education, especially when it starts off with young people on how mm-hmm. all this works, how the U.S. is, what it is, the great country. And the Constitution and the things you hit on, Greg, with those instruments that help support the Constitution. Just mm-hmm. think of this. If Trump had won, and here's another opinion, Trump should win at least by 75%. The percentage he won is not really the best. But we wouldn't have the issue of the southern border. We wouldn't mm-hmm. have the 13 U.S. soldiers lost in Afghanistan. We wouldn't have the attacks on gun legislation, on gun rights as we have. There's so many things that would not have been if Trump was sitting in the White House. And now we see what happens when we just sit lackadaisical and don't get down to the business that needs to be gotten down to. And, you know, Pennsylvania is losing a lot of money just by the elimination of just by the rules that Biden changed as it applies to oil and energy.
That's true. Cheryl, what do you think?
We wouldn't have this crazy inflation. My goodness, look at that. My shrimp fried rice costs about $1.50 more now a box.
Oh, no. Well, here's the weird part, though. The deep state, you know, the gelding old party, the Republicans, and the Marxist Democrats have traded, you know, their privilege, their position, their status, the stupid little things that, that make their miserable lives worthwhile for our freedom, for our economy, for our energy, for our Constitution, for our foreign affairs relations and everything else that's happened, you know, and yet they're willing to make that trade from our stuff. That's the problem. Cheryl, what do you think?
Oh, my gosh, where do I start? But hello to your caller. I didn't catch the name.
Pianchi.
Yeah. So wonderful to meet you via the radio. You know, you are an example of, you know, this is how it's impacting a real-life person in mm-hmm. real time. And you took it down even to the specific kind of rice you like to buy. And how much more a single box of that costs. All of this has happened just since the election, right? Mm-hmm. Which it feels like is it over yet? Can we fix this now with another election? No, we still got 3 years to go. And you know, I don't really know what more to say about that other than when people start understanding it at this personal level, it's good to be on the radio. It's good to talk to your neighbors. Also have to be involved with our elected officials. Here in America, we are a constitutional republic, which means we have a representative government. Our elected officials are not superstars. They're not rock stars. They are supposed to represent us. But how do they represent us if they never hear from us? They're hearing from the other side constantly. We have got to be more personally involved, whether your issue is the election, whether it's water rights, whether it's education, or like me, I'm a pretty much a single issue voter, the Second Amendment. They must hear from you. It's important that you know who they are. It's more important, I will argue, that mm-hmm. they know who you are.
Now, here's the perfect segue to what we do at Axe Radio, because I'm hoping to enlist you and your show as citizen legislators, as people that want to move from a talk show host to an action radio host. And the difference is we have a working citizen legislature. We have a website, writeyourlaws.com, which our brilliant webmaster has completely revamped. It's absolutely wonderful. It's easy to use. And the point of that is that anybody anywhere in the country, actually anywhere in the world now, because we're going worldwide with this, but anybody can write a bill. And not only what we're really doing is that we're changing the relationship of the citizen to the government. We're saying that we, the people, give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. So we have a website which has your name, your email, the title of the bill, the subject of your bill, the basic format being a rationale why you want your bill. We state the old bill with code and, you know, U.S. code and citations and the whole bit. And then you write your amendment to what you want. And if people don't know how to do that, which most people don't, you come to me, we get you on the show, we show you how to do that, and we form a bill, something can be submit directly to Congress, state legislatures, school boards, city councils, county commissions, local, state, and federal government. And it's much more than just, you know, not only are they going to hear from us, we're going to supply them with legislation and say, this is how we consent mm-hmm. to be governed. Now, what are you going to do with it? Okay. And then the lobbying mm-hmm. begins, and then the talk show begins, and the media begins, and the pressure. And then, of course, elections. We say, look, if you're not going to pass laws that give us our freedom, then what's the point of you being there? You know, and this is the whole point. And the idea is to counteract the dollars of, say, Big Pharma, for example, with votes. So when Big Pharma buys immunity from product liability, I've already written a bill which puts full product liability back on Big Pharma. Okay? Is Congress mm-hmm. going to write that law? No, because they're going to lose their donations. So we've already written it. It's been done. It's already been done at Action Radio. I did about, what, 6 months or a year ago. I forgot. I'll have to look it up. But the point is, it's there. We have several Second Amendment bills. I'll send them to you. Okay. So if you're interested, you don't have to tell me now, because this, I always like people to think. But if you think that you're interested in going beyond talking to people and actually advocating legislation, going from a conservative journalist to a conservative news advocate, going from a talk show host to an Action Radio host, I'd love to have you. I'd love to have you part of this, and you can take it wherever you want. There's no restrictions. You take the bills you want. You talk about them the way you want. You share the links to the bills. People share the links to the bills that they want. There's no hierarchy. There's no structure. It's all because, you know, I believe people are free and independent, so I'm not going to put restrictions on anybody. So as a free and independent person, you can write legislation and get it back to us. We're like, great, come on the show, let's write a bill. You know, if you're not sure how, then you know, you want some coaching and input. I mean, Bianca will call in, Jonathan will call in. You know, I mean, our gun folks will call in. You know, we can schedule this. How's that for a new opportunity?
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Well, thank
and,
you.
You know, kind of a kitchen, right, where people come in and they throw some ingredients in and they say, look, what about this? And, you know, part of me goes, you know, I tend to pause a second when I hear somebody say, there ought to be a law, right? Because then you go, well, okay, so that means you are willing to put the boot of the federal government or the boot of your local law enforcement or something on your neighbor's neck because there's something in the world that you don't like. Maybe start talking to your neighbor first before you jump to, there ought to be a law. However, here in Arizona, I'm very involved with the AZCDL. They write good bills. They help kill bad bills. And in the process of writing a good bill, that is a law, but it's a good law. And so I do think that this is such an amazing idea that you've thought up and get people's, you know, minds working and their creativity and, you know, well, what could be better? And sometimes people don't even know what's broken and needs fixed. They just know that, you know, they, in the process of walking from their front door to their mailbox and back, they've probably broken five laws because there's just too many laws, right?
Well, that's by design, too, so that you're always guilty of something. Yeah. In fact, we have two bill writers. Pianke has a bill. Jonathan has a bill. I'm going to give you guys a couple minutes to talk about your bills. And then I'm going to find out what the ABCDL is. But, yeah, you're already on this, which is great. But a couple of requirements for our bills. They have to be single subject. They need to be short enough for, like, one or two pages so that anybody can understand them. And they have to increase everybody's freedom. So we believe in the 14th Amendment, the equal protection of laws. There's no special interest legislation, you know, in my in our whole catalog of laws. And they have to be, like I say, easily understood. They're not, you know, lawyered to death. Sorry, Jonathan, you know, with all kinds of extra verbiage and things like that. There's not all these extra conditions. It's very straightforward, very logical stuff. Pianke, Jonathan, who wants to go first with one of your bills? Let's go with Pianke.
Well, my bill is that, as Greg explained earlier, that on Voters Day, on November, that November day, when a voter goes into the polling place, that he can either turn, he or she can turn left or right and go to the federal ballot. Or if they don't want to go to the federal ballot, go to the state and local ballot. The federal ballot should be separate from state and local. Vice president, president. Congressperson, U.S. Senator should only be on that ballot. The people that's allowed to vote on that ballot has been properly vetted, similar to the U.S. passport. You can put all sorts of technology in it, the iris in your eyes, fingerprints, voice recognition, so on, so on, so on. But there's nothing else on there but vice president, president, and those that's running for federal office. And that eliminates the possibility for illegals who some states, like New York, has allowed them to vote locally. They even have the option to vote for one of the federal candidates. So in simple terms, that's what it's about.
Beautiful. Thank you. Cheryl?
I'm sorry?
Well, don't feel on the spot here. you know, but I'm just curious, do you have an, you know, if you have a reaction to that, that idea.
I mean, that the federal ballot should be separated from a state ballot? I've heard that idea floated before, and I can't imagine why it would be a bad thing. And it would certainly make audits easier, faster. And I think that it's bizarre that Arizona has done the first audit of an election ever, right? This should be something that we're doing more often. So,
well, how about every election, every presidential election? That would be a good thing to do a proper audit.
Maybe that's a bill that somebody needs to float out there. But I think that that's a great idea.
Cool. I think so too. In fact, it took me a while to sort of, you know, understand what Pianki was getting to. And this, like I say, I don't know all the ins and outs of everything yet, but I'm coming more and more to thinking this is, we got to do more with this. Jonathan, you have a bill that we don't talk about anywhere near enough. And this is your particular expertise.
First of all, I want to comment that when you cast one ballot, the problem is there's like at least three different sets of laws, you know, for local, for Congress, and for president. And that's one of the problems is that we got one piece of paper, but there's all these different laws that are happening there. And I think you might be referring to under COVID, all the people who were, you know, had unpaid rent and all these people and the landlords. So I proposed a, like they did with the savings and loan crisis, that the government actually do something useful and loan the money to the landlords and businesses so they're made whole, and then collect it over time from the out-of-work people.
Yeah. Now, if you have a question, take a look at Pianki's bill, and if you have comments to it. See, Cheryl, the other thing we do is that we have public comment. You know, so just like a regulation. So people comment on the bills, and then we use those comments to amend the bill so they're better bills. And we keep the record of that because we keep the comments. And so that's how we know where we started and where we ended up. So this is very much like a regular legislative process. Go ahead, Pianki, and then we'll get to John's
bill. Another thing, too, this is already allowed in Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. The Congress has the right to set the rules and regulations on the federal ballot. Of course, they don't on state and local ballots. So the thing is that you leave the other things with the state. You never will get all 50 states to comply, but you do have the ability to make sure that the federal ballot, that those that's casting a vote, you only got three punches. President, Vice President, that's one punch. Second punch, the U.S. Senator. And the third punch is the Congressperson. That's it.
No, it's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, we need help. We need Action Radio hosts across the country to help talk about these with millions of people. Jonathan, anything more on your liquidity bill? And then Cheryl has an announcement. I want to make sure we get to that.
Well, it just seems that we have gotten past it. But remember that the idea of forcing the landlords and businesses to suffer by a moratorium was not a good balance. And it's just a kind of a philosophy that we couldn't just make the businesses pay the price for a bad government policy.
Yeah. In fact, I'll be writing a constitutional amendment to take away the right of Congress to borrow money. So we're going to amend Article 1, Section 8. I'll be talking about that in the coming, probably next week sometime. Cheryl, you've got an announcement. And any thoughts you have on Action Radio or anything you want to talk about your show, feel free. You've got about 2.5 minutes left. And thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Fantastic. And thank you again so much for not only asking me, but continuing to work with my crazy calendar. So every year I am a co-organizer and I am the co-MC of our big 2A rally on the lawn of our Arizona State Capitol. And it's a wonderful event. It's grown to easily 4,000 attendees, probably more every year. We've grown every year to thousands more. And when I first became involved with it, it's been put on for 9 years by a group called Riders USA. They're a motorcycle club that's very tapped into our constitutional rights. And I didn't go for years because I don't own a motorcycle. So they came to me one year and they were like, how do we grow this thing? And I said, well, first of all, what if we call it what it really is? It falls over Arizona's birthday weekend. Arizona was made a state on February 14th, 1912. It almost always falls somewhere around that date. This year it's going to be on Saturday, February 19th. I said, let's celebrate, right? And what are we celebrating? We're celebrating our Second Amendment and the protection of it. So we rebranded it a few years ago, made it a very family-friendly, festival-style event, and it's called the Celebrate and Protect the Second Amendment Rally Event. Now, people are all nervous about the word rally these days because of what happened on January 9th, but there is no reason to be afraid of a word, right? And every event is what you make of it and the people who come out make of it. And we have a junior patriot park. It's designed specifically for kids with face painting and, you know, little lessons on Constitution and that sort of thing. Here in Arizona, we have constitutional carry even on the lawn of our Arizona State Capitol.
That was my question, yeah. We got about 10 seconds left, Cheryl. I hate to cut you short, but of course, you're always welcome back. We'll schedule this some more time. So any contact information, anything else that you want to give about your show, where to find it, when, and all that kind of stuff, we'll do that.
Yeah.
And then we'll have to stop it for today, unfortunately. Yeah. Cheryl?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. So just for the rally, it's the Second Amendment Rally, AZ.com. Check it out. Come out. It's going to be a beautiful day. My show is gunfreedomradio.com.
Sounds good. And I'll be back Monday. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. If you want to help us out here, we've got paypal.me/actionradio. And obviously, I got to get and Cheryl, you're welcome to any of our guest reporters, callers, anybody you want to have on your show, feel free. I believe in sharing. And we're teammates. We're not competitors. That's how we need to start approaching this. And I'll be back Monday. Thank you all very much.